ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
संसार सागरे मग्नं दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मं ग्राह्य गृहीताङ्गं मां उद्धर भवार्णवाल् श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशवाम् भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तदा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वभाव प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःख शमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयादिदरदल् चार्तेष्व विज्ञस्वरान् तेने ब्रह्म हृदा या आदिकवये मुह्यन्दियल् सूरयाः तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तगुहकं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्म प्रोज्झितकैदवोत्र परमो निर्मल्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवम् अत्र वस्तुशिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परै ईश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्य नेत्र कृतिभि शुश्रूषुभि तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पदरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतं द्रवसंयुतं पिबद भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तावत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नुमाम् यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुपेदम् अपेदकृत्यं द्वैपायनो विरहकातरमजुहाव पुत्रेदि तन्मयदया तरवोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अदितितीर्षदां तमोन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्याससूनम् उपयामि गुरुं मुनीनाम् नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भदां मुरारेर्मधुरीं न कनिकापि कापि कापीम् नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशकारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दं व्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्णश या संहैगदोल्गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्ख कौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रम् राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वदालयेशमनिशं हृदि भावयामि ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः लास्ट् सण्डे वी वर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि मूमेण्ट् आफ् द सोल् after it leaves the body, what happens to the soul? In the Shastras, it is a subject which has a lot of interest from the viewpoint that those who are, those who believe that soul exists in the body, for them, this is a very interesting topic, because as we discussed last week, that the life and death, what is perceived by the materialists in terms of this body, is only a small part of the long journey what the soul, ever since it's left the spiritual world, is going through. In other words, that when the spirit soul left the spiritual world, came to this material consciousness, and in contact with the material elements, when it is in contact with the material elements, the soul has come to the position that it is entangled in its material way of life. And in that process, it actually goes through different planetary systems. And by good fortune, one gets his human body in this earthly planet, which is an opportunity for him to go back to the spiritual world again. That is the Vedic conclusions. That in no other planetary systems, this facility is possible, what is available in the earthly planet, because of the way the material body or the body of the human species is created compared to the demigods or even in the lower planetary systems. So we were discussing that there are two routes through which the living entity falls into. One is known as Devayanam and the other one is known as Pidriyanam. Devayanam means that the living entity has already started its progressive path towards the spiritual world. And because it has acted in the right way, that being fully detached to the material world and acted without any attachment to the results of his activities, that the various kinds of pious activities has lifted him from this earthly planet, and it is on its way back to the Janalokam, Maharlokam, Tapolokam, Satilokam and onwards. And eventually, when at certain point in time, when Lord Brahma, when he goes into his devastation time, in other words, there are different kinds of plans, or in other words, what's called as the devastation happens. So at that point, these living entities who have traveled through the Devayana process, they go back to the spiritual world. In other words, those who are in the Devayana, they don't have a rebirth again. It is only those who are in the Pidriyana process that they have to accept their body again. So that is the Shastric injunction on that. So Devayanam is the process whereby you go back to the spiritual world in steps, or in other words known as Kramamukti, or in other words gradual liberation process. And Pidriyanam is that process by which the living entity comes back to this earthly planet again and accept another material body. So this is the situation with the third planet, with the Devayanam and Pidriyanam. So in Krishna says about that in the Bhagavad Gita, that those who are fortunate enough, and when they have performed their activities with the detachment, without attached to the results of their activities, and those pious activities will elevate a person to move into the Devayanam situation. Now, what we have to look at is that if one comes back into the Pidriyanam process, that one gets back to this planet again, and then what happens to the living entity? It is there the interest lies. Because to move into Devayanam or to move towards the higher planetary systems, it requires a tremendous effort from the living entity side. Spiritual knowledge, understanding of spiritual activities, and executing the spiritual activities without desiring for any results from that. Kshine punye martyalogam mishandi. Otherwise, one has to come back here. When the pious activities are finished in the heavenly planets, he has to come back again into this earthly planet. That is the condition, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So, when he comes back through the Pidriyanam to this earthly planet, he has got a material body. Now, this material body which has come to him again in the human form is the only opportunity to come out of this cycle of birth and death. That is the most important thing to remember. Because it is in this body, it is possible. Vedic literature gives a lot of importance to the human life, to the human species. Not because of anything else. In the modern lifestyle, we think this human life is a very valuable lifestyle because we can have the highest degree of sense gratification. That is the way the modern civilization has accepted human life. But from the Vedic point of view, human life is the only rare opportunity to go back to the spiritual world if one wants to. Otherwise, one has to continue through that cycle of birth and death. And this cycle of birth and death has to be understood properly, that how much distress it brings to the soul when it goes through changing its bodies one after the other. And this is the most difficult thing. So this opportunity given for going back to the spiritual world, when it is wasted, Krishna thinks that it is the most greatest opportunity lost forever. That is Krishna's conclusion. Ladhva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadira turnam bhadet yadin anumurtyadaval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvatasyal. That this golden opportunity of human life, Krishna says, if it is wasted, Krishna considers that person as one who is committing suicide. He is considered to be a soul killer. That's how Krishna calls him. Atmahanta. That is, Mrdeham Adyam Sulabham Sudurlabham Plavam Sugalpam Guru Karnadharam Mayana Ulena Namaswaderidam Puman Bhavabdim Madarel Sa Atmaha. Krishna uses the word Almaha. Almaha means one who kills oneself, one kills his own soul. Krishna calls that person who does not utilize this human life for spiritual activities and going back to the spiritual world. So, what happened to those who are in the traveling of the Pidriyanam? Pidriyanam means that the traveling back again to this earthly planet and accepting another body, executing again karma, and continue to activate karma, and again enjoying the results of that karma, and that cycle going on here again and again. Lord Kapila, when he was talking to Devahuri Devi, this is what he explained. Pitra Suryaganayaji Dharmigoyo Grihastha Sajanipadadi Kale Dekshino Dhovagami Mayin Hidavakamam Karma Dudak Padartham Kapila Danu Viditvam Devahuti Negadil. Lord Kapila says to Devahuti Devi, Pitra Suryaganayaji, even if you have performed so many sacrifices to please the demigods and the forefathers, even then, Dharmigoyo Grihastha, even if he is a Grihastha who has performed everything according to the Shastra strictly, that a householder has much more responsibility compared to a Brahmachari or a Sannyasi. So the householder has the greatest possibility of entangling himself in this world. That we all know. Householder life means simply entanglement. Nothing else. He doesn't achieve very much. But at the end of lifetime, all he has to show is this family life, what he has done for 40 or 50 years, whatever time he has. So, what Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi is, Pitra Surya Ganayaji Dharmigoyo Grihastha, even if he is a Grihastha householder, who has lived a dharmic life, in other words, followed everything very strictly according to the Varnashram Dharma and the injunctions of the Vedic literature, even then, Saja Nipadadikale Dekshino Dhovagami, when he finishes his material body, he is not going to go up. He has to go down. This is the conclusion. Why he has to go down? The reason is given there. Mahi nihida akamam karma dodak padartham. That because he has performed his activities with attachment, with a desire to enjoy and desiring the result, all the sacrifices were performed with the desire for results. All the material activities were performed desiring the results. If that is the case, mahi nihida kamam nihidam akamam karma dodak padartham. Kapila tanuriditvam devahutyai negadil. That he has no escape route, actually. He has to suffer and he has to change his body and live here again in this material world conditions. In one planet to another, one species to another, that cycle has to continue. So Kapila Vasudeva said this to Devahuti Devi. And in that process, he also mentioned that in simple terms, he said, that as soon as the spirit soul enters into the womb of the mother, what happens to him? he experiences distress there. And when he comes out, he forgets everything what has happened inside the womb. That is the power of Maya. Maya has captured him so nicely that he forgets everything, all the promises he made to the Supreme Lord. And then he acts again independently. That is what's mentioned there. Yuvati chadaragino jada bodo bhyakando prasavagalida bodham pidayo langhya bhalyam. That yuvati chadaragino, that when he is inside the womb of the mother, yuvati chadaragino, he is very distressed. Jada bodo bhi akando, when he comes out and he is in unconscious state, he is coming out. Why? Because everything what was in his memory is completely lost at that point. Prasavagalidabhodam pidayo langhyabhalyam. Prasavagalidabhodam, that means that during the delivery time, the pain that he has experienced trying to come out of the womb, that is also forgotten. Pidayo langhyabhalyam. The balyam time or the early parts of his life is also sometimes distressful because often he is not able to express himself. The baby is not able to express himself what he is experiencing to the parents or whoever is looking after the baby. And the parents are thinking that he doesn't have this or this should be some medicine is given to him, not knowing exactly what his problems are. And often the baby suffers at that time. Pidayo langhya balyam punaravibada mukhyateva tarunya kale kapilatanuridi tvam devahutyai nigadil. Then what happens after that is, as soon as he comes out of this balyam or his childhood and boyhood, and then he becomes a young person. And when he becomes a young person, he thinks that everything now I am in control of me. Punaravibada mukhyateva tarunya kale kapilatanuridi tvam devahutyai nigadil. That at that time, his whole changing thought process, although experienced so much distress in the womb and outside, it's all forgotten at that time. Because immediately, as soon as he becomes strong in his body, and he starts realizing that I can do what I like, and that independence starts, and under the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, he forgets the distresses of life, and he starts acting independently. This is how the Shastras talk about it. Now, in the Grihastha's case, what happens is for the Grihastha, because of the Grihastha's lifestyle is such that due to the possibility of earning money in this world and due to his interaction with the material nature to a larger scale, and Grihasthas are more accountable in their activities compared to a sannyasi or a brahmachari. Sannyasis and brahmachari are relieved from this distress. But Grihastha's distress is much more than in other two ashramas. Therefore it says, ahaha bahula himsam sanchitathai kudumbam pradidinam anubushnan strijido balalali. That is how Grihastha is explained in the Shastram. Ahaha bahula himsam sanchitathai kudumbam. We can see this very clearly in this world, that beating to the head is saying, ahaha bahula himsam. The kind of sinful activities a Grihastha is performing, sanchitathai kudumbam, just to maintain the family, is willing to do anything. That is the norms of this world. Pratidinam anubushnan strijido balalali. That in his household life, he is only busy with one thing, maintaining the family. That is his greatest happiness. He has nothing else in this world to look forward to. This is the case of the majority of the people in this world, that everyone is occupied in the household life except maintaining the family, that considers that this is their greatest obligation in this world. Ahaha bahula himsam sanchitarthai kudumbam pratidinam anubushnan strijido balalali. What happens is, after children are born, the only activity he performs is he's carrying these children all the time, playing with them, looking after them. Like this, he spends his whole lifetime. And he will not, no matter whatever you tell him, nothing will go into their head at that time. He will not listen to anybody, but he will listen to only one person. That is, who is that? Pratidinam anubushnan strijido balalali. That is only his wife. His wife has to tell him, then he will listen. Even if you tell him from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam anything, nothing will go into the ears. Why? Strijido balalali. That attachment to the, that enjoyment, sense enjoyment, what he has experienced with his wife, is so strong that is the only thing that he will listen. Srijido balalali. Vishadihi grihasattam yadanam mayabhattam Krishna says there, Vishadihi Grihasattam, a person who has lived a life like that in householder life, Krishna says he has to pay a heavy price for it. Vishadihi Grihasattam, Yadhanamai Abhatta, Kabila Tanuriditvam, Devahutye Negadil. Kabila Vasudev, Lord Kabila said to Devahuti Devi, that kind of life is not recommended. That is not the life one should lead in this world. Simply engage in maintaining the family and taking great pleasure out of it. When the tamogunam or the mode of ignorance is very, very strong, that is how the consciousness will be. To attach to family life and to attach the maintenance of the family and deriving pleasure from that family life. So, in this way, you will see there in the teachings of Lord Kabila, Kabila Vasudev particularly give reference to this householder life, Grihasthashram. Ahaha bahula himsam sanchitartai kudumbam pratidinamanubushnan srijito balalali vishadihi grihasattam yadanamai abhatta kabiladanuriditvam devahutyai negadil. So in this way he explained about the householder life, and he also mentioned to Devahuti Devi that this is the opportunity to come out of this cycle of birth and death. And that is in other words known as the winning over the death. How to win over the death, that is the topic of discussion. Because when one has understood one's own position in this material world, that he is a spirit soul who is actually in association with the matter, has got entangled himself in this material world and started this long journey of changing the bodies one after the other, and traveling from one planet to another, one species to another, the living entity has no shelter anywhere. He is trying to find how to come to an end to this situation. And it is then for those people who are looking, who believe or accept this change of bodies, who accept that the living entity is put into this condition, only then they start searching for the relief from that. So this is that process, winning over the death is the topic in all the Shastra. All the Vedic literature are points out to only this one thing, how to get out of this cycle of birth and death. Because no other literature tells you, no other literature has given so much information on the cycle of birth and death. This is what is the most important thing, that when the living entity is changing its body, what is going through in different spaces, and the material nature, how it punishes that person who has got attached himself to the material world. So when this discussion started, Mrityu Vijayam, as it is referred, or the winning over death, that process is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when it comes to that, we can see very clearly certain things, that when one attach, what creates this attachment to this material world? That is the first question one has to ask. That when one finds, from the Shastra we understand, that when one finds extreme pleasure and happiness in the activities of this material world, when one gets attracted to the objects of this material world, he is considered to be under the mode of ignorance. This is the way Shastra described that. The three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion and ignorance, sattvam, rajas and tamas. When this tamogunam predominates, automatically the desire for or the attachment for the material objects increases. This is the first symptom of that. Tamogunam brings attachment to the objects of this material world. In the Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, while explaining this point, the nine sages talk to Vasudeva and Devaki, the same thing, the same message. When Srinarada Maharshi continued, he said, this attachment to the material world, how did this happen? As soon as we come to the lower modes of nature, the attachment develops. And what actually makes a person not being attached to this material world, that is also mentioned there. When one is in the mode of goodness, the goodness will dictate to him, or the goodness will control the consciousness in such a way that he will realize that every object in this material world is nothing but causing distress to him at some point or the other. So one who can discriminate these things between the mode of goodness and the mode of ignorance, he will be in a position to see that what happens if I get attracted and attached to this material world, that is where it begins from. Now in the Shastra, also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very clearly explained that every single living entity in this world is afraid of death. That is no doubt about it, that death is such a thing. Who is not afraid of death? We can see in this world that even very, very wealthy people, even in spite of their best control on the situation, whatever they have, still when death comes, they are also baffled. They are also They also do not want to die, but it is forced upon them. They have no freedom to make that decision, to do something different. So death is something which is very frightening experience. And that frightening experience is experienced by every living entity, not only by the human species, even by the lower species. Even if I try to kill an ant, the ant, as soon as it knows that I am trying to kill that ant, the ant immediately runs away from that. That is the nature of the ant. It is not only the ant, even if you look at the other animals, even the dogs or cats or even cows, anything, if you try to kill that animal, immediately it runs away from there. Now, what made that animal to think that it has to run away from us when you try to kill him? The reason for that is that the animal who has also gone through different bodies, in this lifetime, it has not experienced any death. In this lifetime, it has taken birth and it is living a life in this world. It has not experienced any death. But still, something inside is telling them, telling this particular living entity, that death is painful. So how did this happen? In the Shastra, this is referred to as Ajnana Smarana. That means memory from the past life. And that memory which comes forward makes us to realize that death is a painful thing. This is how we understand why death is painful. That every living entity wants to escape from death. But running away from death, you cannot protect yourself. It is not possible. You cannot escape from death by running away from that. And that is why the conquering the death is necessary. Now, how to conquer the death? That question comes up next time. So in that process, in the Shastra, there is explanation to all these things. That when a living entity accepts a material body, what is happening to him is, that for example, if you take that there is a drama going on. In that drama, if you see, watch carefully, say, Duryodhana was killed by Bhima. Just an example, that there was a fight happening and Bhima has killed Duryodhana. So that is what in the drama that has happened. So when Duryodhana was killed, many people start, oh, Duryodhana has been killed now by Bhima. That's the way people perceive that. Bhima has beaten him to death and pulled out all his intestines and made his body into pieces. All these things you find in the screen or in the drama, you experience these things. But actually what has happened there is that person who has dressed up like Duryodhana, he has only what has been killed there is his dress. It's not the person. It is a dress that has been killed. The person, nothing has happened. He will go back as soon as the curtain falls, he goes back and he'll be moving around here and there doing his normal things. But for people who have seen that, they see that that Duryodhana has been killed. That's the way they will perceive that. Only few people will think that in the drama, because he played the part of Duryodhana there, and somebody has played the part of Bhimasena and Bhimasena killed Duryodhana, they think that Duryodhana has actually been killed now. But the person who has acted does not experience anything. He has performed his particular part and he has left the scene and went away. Now from this, what you have to understand is that what is actually dying is the dress, not the person inside. The person inside is somebody different. Now, because when the dress is destroyed, if we start thinking that that person has been killed, that is our misunderstanding. So similarly, what we have to remember is that when a person is killed, actually, or when a person dies, is what actually normally happens is he is throwing away his body which has come to him from outside. In his normal condition, he is spirit soul. The spirit soul has its own identity. It is not associated with the material body. This material body is not something which was he has created in the sense that it was given to him due to his activities. A particular human material body was given to him. So what has come to him can be given up also. It has come to me, so I can give it up at some point or the other. And this is what is known as winning over the death. In other words, normal conditions in this material world, we will think that if we keep this material body forever, that means we have succeeded over the death, or we have won over the death. That is the materialistic conception. But from the spiritual point of view, it is not that you keep this material body forever. That is not the winning over death. Winning over death means not accepting another material body again and not go through this process of change one after the other. That is what is known as winning over the death. That means Personality, the individual has to be situated in a spiritual position. That is what is winning over death means. Not that I keep my whatever material body I have forever and say that I have succeeded not getting killed or I've won over the death. That is not the Vedic conception. Winning over death from the Vedic point of view is to be situated in one's own spiritual identity after shedding the last material body once for all. Now, often when you say this to people, people will always say to you that where is the proof for all these things? They will ask this question. They will also say that all the great devotees, they are also dying. Shankaracharya died, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu died, they also died and gone. So how do you know that they are not dying? This will be their question. But this is coming from the ignorance. The ignorance, because if you say this to Shankaracharya or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will laugh at us, because they know that this conditioned soul in its conditioned nature do not understand very much about the spiritual existence of the or spiritual nature of the soul. Normally, we are caught up in what is known as avasthatrayam. Avasthatrayam means that the normal conditioned soul has a certain sphere of activity known as Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti. It is in these three states we exist. And these three states, which are known as the awakened state, dream state and the deep sleep, in these three states of existence, he does not perceive anything, any knowledge which is transcendental. It is impossible to perceive that knowledge in these three states of existence. So, living entity has got this freedom. He can go between these three states. All the time, he is moving from one to another. Sometimes he is in the awakened state, sometimes in the dream state, sometimes in the deep sleep. And in these three states of existence, his body, his mind and his senses and the intelligence is occupied. With that, we'll come to that. How that reaction, how that interaction happens between the subtle body and the gross body in the different states of existence. So generally what will happen is that when one is experiencing these different things in life, one takes it for granted that this is my original state of existence. For example, when the person who is liberated, he experiences that liberation to himself. We cannot know that. We won't know that, whether that person is liberated or not, because it is his experience. Just like in the dream state, I'm seeing an elephant. Now, you won't be able to see the dream, what I'm experiencing in my dream. When I see the elephant, you will not be able to see that. In the similar way, the realized soul, when he sheds his last mortal body or material body, and goes back into the liberated state or to the spiritual world, he is not accountable or answerable anymore to this material world. He doesn't have to go and tell everybody, look, I'm now liberated, I'm going back. And he doesn't have to do that, because in that state of existence, liberation is such that the liberated condition, the living entity has already crossed over these three states of existence, which is known as the phase of ignorance, the three phases of ignorance. So one who has crossed over that, he is not affected by this, and it is not possible for one who is in these three phases to understand the consciousness of that person who has left these three states of existence. So this is why it is difficult sometimes to make this understand to those who find that everybody is dying, because in their concept, as well as the material body is dead, they think that death has happened to him. So that's the way they see it, because they don't know anything about other than that. This is what they see all the time in their life. But from the Vedic literature, we understand that life is not simply shedding this mortal body, which is one day anyway will drop off, whether we like it or not. But for the liberated soul, that is the last material body, which before he goes back to the spiritual world. So it is then that the Devayana process begins. So while discussing this point, there are so many things mentioned. Krishna has also spoken about this very, very clearly. Unless one comes to this consciousness, understanding that the death is approaching any time and death is going to affect our life at any time. Krishna used these things in a very nice way when he spoke to Uddhava about it. Krishna said there that that it is nothing much different, Uddhava. Actually, Krishna said to Uddhava that suppose somebody has been condemned to be killed, condemned to be hanged. So a person is going to be hanged. Generally, in this country, of course, there is no capital punishment, but in places where there is capital punishment, normally it is done in the early hours in the morning, because after the judgment is given by the judge that somebody has committed a very heavy crime, and the result is that nothing else works and the final decision has been given that he should be hanged. So the night before, the judge will go to him and ask him that there is nothing I can do. I have to implement the justice. Justice has to be done. So I had to give this punishment to you. But before being hanged, is there any desire you have which I can help to fulfill? So in other words, at that time, he is saying to him that if you have any other desire to be fulfilled before you get killed or before you're hanged, please let me know. If I can help anyway, I could do that. This is the judge will be saying, because in judge's mind also, it is not that he is very happy to do that. And in his own mind, there is from inside, somebody is telling him that what you are doing is a very, very heavy punishment. And doing that, his own consciousness is giving him, but on the basis of law, he has to do that. So still, because everyone is an individual, and at the end, even judge has a consciousness, he goes and starts asking this question to the criminal. It happens often. And at that time, if you ask that person who has committed the crime or who has been condemned to death, what will be his reaction? Have you ever thought about that? That person, you will not be interested if you tell him, I'm going to give you a nice feast now. Will he be interested in the feast? Will he be interested in anything else? On the other hand, that fear of death will completely overpower him at that point, because he knows that in a few hours' time, his life has come to an end in this world, and he will automatically think about what is waiting for him in the future. These thoughts will come to him. And similarly, sometimes relatives also will go to him and start asking him, it is a very sad thing, what has happened, but what can be done? Is there anything we can do? Because they still want to make sure that on that bodily relationship, they want to comfort him somehow or the other. So they put all these consoling words to him, or pacifying words to him, to try to make him happy. Krishna asking Uddhava, will any of those things will make that person happy at that point? This is a very interesting question, because in reality, every one of us are waiting for that. There is not much difference between us and that person. Only difference is, it's a question of time, that we also, one day or the other, has to go through this, eventually the death. That process is waiting. Krishna says there, that if this is the situation, what are you going to do? He says to Uddhava, that what is the point in protecting that person? That person has nothing to protect anymore, because the death is waiting for him. Only question, probably he will ask the judge, many people have said this, that will be, that instead of doing it at 5 o'clock in the morning, can you make it a little bit earlier, so that I don't have to go through this agony again for more time. So instead of being executed in the morning, he will probably say to the judge that if you can do it a little bit earlier, I will consider that as a good fortune. This is the only thing he will request. He won't be interested in anything else except except that he wants to leave his body and go away from here, because ultimately that is what is waiting for him. Krishna says to Uddhava that this situation is not much different than anybody else in this world. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna can see these things and think about it and present it to us in much more real way. And we, conditioned soul, under the influence of modes of nature, thinks that we have complete independence to do what we want. And we act in all sorts of ways to make our life comfortable in this world. That's what we do. Krishna is not saying that you should not make your life, He says, Krishna says you should do what you have to do in this world to maintain the body, because it is only the need of the body. It is not that it is simply by improving the conditions in this world one is going to come out of death. Rather, Vedic literature very strongly points out this one thing, that this human life that has been given to us is not for improving our material conditions or increasing our material life, but on the other hand, it is meant for getting out of this cycle of birth and death. That is how it is mentioned. So Krishna said this to Uddhava, and it is the same point here. Kapila Vasudev, Kapila Mani, also Lord Kapila's mind says to Devahuti Devi, reminded the same point to him, or point to her. So living entity hasn't got much freedom. The freedom what he has is that in the short span of time what he has in this world, he has an opportunity to understand his real position, what he is and what his conditions are. And if possible, if he is good fortunate enough to take advantage of the Shastra, or advantage of the devotees, and utilize that for developing that strength to go back home, back to Godhead. So that is the only option Krishna has given us. Nothing else. We don't have any other option. This is the only option we have. So a living entity who is fortunate will take advantage of that. And that is how it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, the question is coming now, that when Krishna spoke about all these things, then automatically Grihastha's life is the one which you were talking about before, that very much involved in the activities of this world. Sannyasi and Brahmachari, by virtue of their indifference to material life and material activities, they have a lot of concession Krishna has given in the Brahmachari life as well as in the Sannyasa ashram. But it is the Grihastha who has to be extremely careful in this world. So generally we have the conception that at a certain age we have to get married, and once we got married then we have to have children. That is the next thing. First you would like to have, at least you should have a boy, they think. And sometimes they think that, oh, if we have a boy we should have a girl as well, because unless the girl, and the girl is born, how can the family tree continue? This is the way we increase our material existence. This is how the material existence increases. And then when we have the family life increasing day by day, from the Shastric point of view, all this is considered to be not necessary. Because what happens is, when you give birth to a child, although a man has already himself is experiencing waiting for the death, what has he done now? He has opened the door for another person also to experience death. This is what family life means. You are opening more and more doors for more and more people to come and join you in this effort of cycle of birth and death. Or in this cycle of birth and death, you are bringing them in. This is what family life is all about. So normally when people have the understanding that there is no punishment for this in this world, for such activity. But if a father has not, or a mother, who has not executed their responsibility, not only to themselves, but even to their own children, Srimad Bhagavatam says they have to pay a price for it later on. Not only in this world, but in a later time, in another planet, in another world. This is the law. That is the law from the Vedic point of view. That it says there that when Krishnadev was instructing his children, 100 children, he talked about this very, very carefully. He mentioned this. Devam nasasyal, gurur nasasyal, sajano nasasyal, pida nasasyal, janani nasasyal, namo jayedya samupeda mrityum. That first of all, Krishnadev says to his children, first of all, one should learn how to escape from this namo jayedya samupeda mrityum, how to come out of this death, this process of death. Not only that, gurur nasasyal, sajano nasasyal, devam nasasyal, janani nasasyal, that he is neither a father, nor a mother, nor a spiritual master, if he is not helping his child, or helping that personality, living entity, to come out of the cycle of birth and death. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam says. And there are, in other places also, the same point is explained in detail. So, actually, the human life is not for increasing material existence, material life. That is not human life is meant for. And that is the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the other Vedic literatures as well. But due to our ignorance, and due to our attraction in this Maya for thinking ourselves to be the controllers, we expand our material activities to such a degree that it gets too late by the time we want to come out of it. That is what happens. In these huge establishments we have created, material establishments, in other words, simply to increase our material existence, which is actually entangled the living entity into this mortal world. That is what happens. So that is the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, there says there that this attachment to this mortal world is known as sticking to it. The sticking happens there. How does it sticking? It sticks to it because the mind gets attached to it and it gets stuck with it. And this sticky nature of the mind is very difficult to take it off from that. That you can see also, for example, suppose somebody, a grandfather or father or anybody, an older person, dies at home. Immediately one will think that if he could have lived a few more years, it would have been nice. That's what he thinks. The relatives are thinking like that. Although he is gone, he's about 80 or 85 years old, and he got sick and he died. The relatives are thinking, after all, he could have lived a few more years, it would have been nice, and in the family everybody would have been happy. But it doesn't happen like that. Why? Because janasya mohoyam aham mameti, me and mine, this concept is so strongly embedded inside that as soon as something related to you or something attached to us, something happens to it, immediately we think that, oh, it is affecting me. It affects me in some way or the other, and I feel like that. But on the other hand, if somebody dies on the street, we think that, oh, that's a natural thing. Anybody dies, what is there so much to worry about? This will be our comment immediately. Why is this difference? When someone dies, we feel that, oh, he could have lived some more. But somebody else dies, it doesn't happen like that. It's the same thing with everything in this world. If you look at it, it's the same thing that happens. For example, if I had some 100,000 pounds in the bank, and if tomorrow that bank is gone bust, immediately my reaction will be that, what has happened? This, what am I supposed to do now? This money has gone. I start immediately approaching the Citizens Bureau, or whatever opportunity is available. I'm tapping all the sources how to retrieve that money. But on the other hand, if another bank has gone bust where I had no money, my remark would be, they're all thieves anyway. This is what's going to happen with all these banks. This will be my comment. And rather, I'll think that I'm not surprised what has happened. They are meant to do these things. So naturally, there is a difference that when it happens to oneself, one feels that it is because that sticky nature is so strong in us that to everything in this material world, we are attached to it, and our attachment is so subtle that sometimes it is very difficult to understand that how strong this attachment is to this material world. So this is why grahastha life is so dangerous. In grahastha life, all these problems are there. They are constantly following us everywhere. And it also pulls us down into our material existence strongly. A brahmachari and sannyasi in normal courses, they do not have this difficulty as long as they stick to the process of sannyasa ashram and process of brahmachari ashram. They are freed from these problems. So, coming to this point, that how one should live in this world, does that mean that one should not have anything to do with the family life? Or one should not engage in work, or one should give up all the work and keep quiet about it? No, that's not what Krishna says. Krishna says that you have to act in this world. To maintain this body, you have to do so many things. But while doing all these things, one has to also remember that this is not the ultimate goal of life. The goal of life is not meant for this maintaining family and looking after family and maintaining them. It's not the only business in life. The real goal of life is ultimately to develop Krishna consciousness. That is the goal of life. If that is not done, Krishna says that life is wasted. So therefore, Krishna has given the word in the Bhagavadam that how should one live in the house? One should live in the house like a guest, Krishna says, like atithi. Atithi means because like a guest he has to perform. A guest comes to a house, normally we receive the guest and we try to make him as comfortable as possible at home. Why we do that? Because we feel that he is a guest, and as a guest he has to be honored and he has to be treated in that way. But at the same time, in the guest's mind, it doesn't happen like that. Guest is thinking that I have nothing to perform here. I have come here as a guest, so I have no responsibility here. And on the other hand, he acts in such a way that although he is enjoying the facilities offered to him by the householder, the guest is not attached to any of them. After 2 or 3 days, when the guest leaves, he forgets everything, what he has done, and he does not feel any connection with that house. Krishna says that is the way a householder should live in this world. Otherwise, if he gets attracted to everything in the family and simply that mode of ignorance builds up in him, immediately the result will be, Krishna says, you will be entangled, and the result will be that one has to go through the reactions of that life. So that is how it is mentioned. Now, what happens to one who wants to come out of this? This is the next question. That the this guest case we have talked about, but on the other hand, we are also saying that the spiritual knowledge is not easily achievable simply by simply by studying the books. That is not possible. Simply by studying the books, one may understand many, many things. But to understand that things, but to act, have to experience that, which is a different case altogether. And theoretically, you can read Bhagavad Gita and read Srimad Bhagavatam also. And it will give you a lot of understanding, and many, many things will come to you, realizations, and Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's given in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, opens up our understanding of life. But at the same time, as far as real life is concerned, nothing has changed. Everything is going on in the same way. So it is to them that this question has been raised. Why does that happen? So this question is very important. That why is that? After reading Srimad Bhagavatam and studying Bhagavad Gita for many, many years, still nothing has changed in my life. I am still experiencing the distresses of this world. Apart from that, I still don't know what is happening to me. So this question is in every devotee's mind. No devotee is free from that. That is why in some instances we find that sometime after many, many years of practicing spiritual life, one still feels a vacuum in life, because he has not, the things what has been studied and taken in has not been digested inside. This digestion process is not done by the intelligence, it is done by the mind. That's the difference comes in. That so many things, those who are on an intellectual platform, they will understand Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam on an intellectual level. They will understand what Krishna has spoken in every verse, and everything is in their head, but nothing has changed as far as the individual is concerned. So it is this time that one has to understand that what situation he has landed in and how the situation has developed in himself. And that is why we have to go back into the process of creation. So, in the Bhagavatam, while expressing this, Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi that this material creation, where has it developed first of all? It has come from what is known as Maya. Maya, or otherwise we refer to as material nature. The material nature is the creation of the, is the origin of this. And from this material nature, we have accepted this material body. What is material nature? That is also very difficult to explain, because the way material nature works is, from sometimes you find something as reality. In so many things in this material world, you can analyze it, but you will not find an answer to that. Why is that I am feeling hungry after a while? Why does I feel thirsty? Why do I have to sleep? Why do I have to wake up? I have no freedom on these things. And it is not only me, it is the same rule applied to all the other living entities. Does it have to be like this, that after a few hours I have to eat some food? So this is known as in the Shastram as Sobhavam. Sobhavam means the nature of that particular living entity by virtue of the creation itself. And if nobody can change these things, this is the material nature how it works. Sobhavastu pravartane, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So, this Swabhavam or material nature is such that it has already created a certain degree of control on us by its law. That's the way material nature is working. We haven't got much freedom to decide whether to eat food or not. When you are hungry, you have to eat food. When you are tired, you have to sleep. When you are sick, you have to take medicine. And when you had enough rest, you have to wake up. You don't have the freedom to sleep forever. No freedom for that. So virtually you haven't got much of a freedom. But we still think we have a lot of freedom. This is our understanding of life. We think, when we are awake, we think we are fully independent. But when you fall down one day, when fully tired, exhausted, completely finished, you drop off, then what freedom have you got? Except to sleep, when no other freedom you have. So in this condition, this is where we understand the nature, or in other words, what is known as the material nature. This material nature is, that is how it controls us. So this material nature, as long as we are under the control of material nature, we have to remember that our freedom is very, very limited. We haven't got much of a freedom. And this is the true position of every living entity in this world. Nobody is independent from that. So, this is material nature. Now, how does material nature work? How does it create? That's the next question. These are all very in a very condensed form. In the Shastram, these things are explained in so elaborately that it requires years and years of study to understand. But in a very nutshell, this is how it is explained. That just like material nature wants to create something, when it is created using the material elements, different living entities were born, and these living entities are always experiencing the different modes of nature. Now, just like when the living entity has been given a body, and when one lives in this world, and it is compared to, in the Shastram, just like a magician's role. A magician, he has got what is known as a rod, isn't it? Magic rod, what he uses. When he is doing different magics, he will ultimately use the rod to show that something has been done with his magic rod. He tries to show that. Sometimes he is able to change the stone into a mango, or a mango into gold, or so many different things he can do. But every time he will use this rod to change it, to show to the people that the magic what he is performing is with the help of this rod, magic rod, what he has in his hand. Similarly, behind this material nature, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna is that magician standing there, using this material nature or Maya as the magic, and engages us in these different activities. But we don't see the magician behind it, we see only the magic. That's the difference. It is a magic that what we are perceiving in this world, but the magician behind it is unknown to us. Who is that? And that is where Shastra brings us this knowledge that behind everything, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning itself, Vedavyasa Maharshi says that Apashyal purusham purvam mayam jatadubhashrayam when bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranahide male apashyal purusham purvam mayam jatadubhashrayam. What did Vedavyas see? Vedavyas saw this. Apashyal purusham purvam mayam cha tadubhashrayam bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihido male. That when the consciousness was completely purified by bhakti yoga, by process of Krishna consciousness, Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, apashyal purusham purvam, he could see that Supreme Personality of Godhead standing there, mayam cha tadubhashrayam. Maya Devi, who was standing there completely under shelter of Krishna, standing there. So what we see is these activities of this Maya Devi, but whereas great sages, they see the person behind Maya Devi, who is controlling the Maya Devi. So that is that difference. So if it is so, how does this Maya Devi engage us in this world, engages us in this world? And that engagement, material nature has got three potencies. And these three potencies are known as the three modes of nature. So, namely, the mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. So, these three modes of nature, just like, you can easily understand what these modes of nature is. Just like a painter, he has got three colors with him. White, black, and red. These three colors. Now, if you think about it, that, say for example, he's got a big canvas on which he is drawing pictures. Say Lechmore Heath, if he is drawing the picture of Lechmore Heath, he will draw the pub. He will draw people coming out of the pub drunk. He will draw the temple, devotees going to the temple with the intention of serving Krishna. Both things are happening in the same canvas, what he is drawing. He has to draw all these things because Lechmore Heath includes both the pub and the temple. So the pub is there and those who are trying to enjoy in their way, in that way, that you have to show. You have to also show the devotees who are trying to glorify Krishna, engage in Krishna service, that also you have to show. Then you have to show all the children, the animals, the people who are taking the dogs on walk, and so many things, people who are driving around the cars. There is unlimited, such a variety of thing will come on that picture if you draw just the picture of Lechmore Heath. So similarly, from this you can see, all what he has got is three colors. And with these three colors, He has made all this picture of Lakshmana Heap. Now, if you want to see that canvas, all you have to do is to wipe off these three colors. When these three colors are wiped out, you see the canvas and its true form. But as long as you have the picture of the different pictures that's been drawn onto it, you think, you start identifying with each one of them. This I know, this pub where it is. Or I know this house where I live. Or I know this person who lives in this house. So like this, you start relating with every object what is drawn on that canvas. It is not much different the way material nature does with the three modes of nature. It's more or less similar to that. It has drawn, this material nature has drawn this material world using every single one of us and drawn this huge picture, massive picture of this planet where so many living entities are engaged in so many different kinds of activities. Somebody is doing something, somebody is doing something different. It is such a variety, but everything falls into these three colors. That is the black, the white and the red. The white is the mode of goodness, black is the mode of ignorance, and the red is the mode of passion. These three colors has been given to it, the names has been given to it, that's all. So under the three modes of nature, we act in different ways at different times, that is all it is. And once these three modes of nature, if you have escaped from that, you are liberated, you are freed from the control of Maya, that's all. Maya's control is as long as you are one of these three colors for her to paint. So once you have freed from that three modes of nature, you are freed from the conditioned existence. Or in other words, then you can see what is happening in the material world freely. Up to that point, you won't see it. It's just like, actually, to look at it in a careful way, you can realize that this is nothing but a big cinema going on. And all the other cinemas what we manufacture in this world is only parts what we have taken from this big cinema. From this big scene, we have taken parts of it and we have made other scenes out of it. That is the small scenes or cinemas what we make ourselves, the films what we make it. But otherwise, the real big cinema is this big cinema, what goes on in this world, nothing different. So in the Bhagavatam, while referring to this, it's again spoken about this, that the way that we perceive this, that the living entity has caught up in this situation, that when one is freed from this connections with it, then he is liberated. That is the freeing from self from the three modes of nature. Traigunyal bhinna vedam bhavadihi bhuvane hina madhyottamam yajnanam shraddha cha karta vasadira vijogam karma cha hara veda. That every activity what we have in this world comes under these three modes of nature. Nothing you can do independent of them. So much we are controlled by the three modes of nature. And this is why it makes it so important to know that what this modes of nature is and in what conditions one act in one particular mode of nature. Traigunyal bhinna vedam bhavadihi bhuvane hina madhyottamam yajnanam shraddha cha karta vasadira visukham karma chakara veda. That karma, even the activities what we perform, even the knowledge what we acquire in this world comes under the three modes of nature. There is knowledge in the mode of ignorance. There is knowledge in the mode of passion and there is knowledge in the mode of goodness. So like this, everything, the food what we eat, the house, the place where we live, the people we associate with, the water we drink, everything comes under the three modes of material nature. Krishna has spent one full chapter in the Bhagavad Gita to express the three modes of nature. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna spent three chapters to discuss the three modes of material nature. So these things, when it is understood, we can see that what actually causes the entanglement of jiva or the living entity in this world. The soul is entangled by the modes of nature. So when one wants to free oneself from that, what should one do? This is the question we have to ask. If one wants to come out of it, and that is what we have to discuss today, that how a living entity, how a soul who has caught up in this material nature, in these three modes of nature, what should one do in that condition? Now, that is where the help of the Shastra comes in. Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are meant for making us to realize the choice what we make to come out of this situation. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, in referring to this, has spoken like this, that when one wants to free oneself from this condition, what one has to do is that that all the Shastras, Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, and all the other books were written only with this purpose, to understand how to come out of this three modes of nature. Ramayana and Mahabharata, particularly these two itihasas and Srimad Bhagavatam also, was not written just like a storybook for us to read and enjoy the story, like a fiction or something like that. That's not what is meant to be, meant understood to be. The purpose of presenting this through Ramayanam and Mahabharatam and other great literature is, the sages knew our psychology, that what the human psychology is. If you tell somebody that, oh, you have to follow these things and you should do it, it's good for you if you do that, nobody is going to follow that. But if you can present these facts through history to the people, then that history is beneficial. Ramayana and Mahabharata is the history of the human society in this planet. And from this history, whatever that has been found out is beneficial for the human society to benefit themselves. That kind of history should be given to them. And that is why this history does. Through Lord Ramachandra's story and through Krishna's story in the Mahabharata, what it is trying to tell us is these important factors. That through the Kauravas and the Pandavas, through Sri Lord Ramachandra and through Ramayana, certain messages are given by Valmiki and Vedavyasa Maharshi to this world. And that is where you will understand why these books are so important. It is no point in studying history like we study in the school and gains nothing from that. For example, olden days, if you look back, thousands of years ago, there was Genghis Khan, a big conqueror. And then there was Timur, and there were so many others who came. These powerful personalities or dictators, what did they do? They traveled, massacred a lot of people, and they said, this is all my land. And one day they died and gone. This is what has happened. Genghis Khan did the same thing, Timur did the same thing, and so many others did the same thing. What have we learned from that? What could we do anything to stop that happening again? We couldn't do anything. Same thing repeated after some time again. Hitler came, Mussolini came, and they also did the same thing. Used a lot of people, killed them, massacred them, used them to their own advantage, and they also left and gone. So this kind of things are repeatedly happening. And knowing this, that this is what's happening, is no good. That is not studying history. History means, if you are learning something from that history, and if history is teaching us something, if we get benefit from that, that history is useful. And that is why studying Ramayana and Mahabharata is teaching us something which neither Hitler's story or Mussolini's story will ever teach us. So there is a big difference there. So while speaking on this, in particularly the Mahabharata and Ramayana, there are two things there. What is mentioned there is, one side is the Kauravas and the other side is the Pandavas. Normally, the three modes of nature we were referring to is the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So the passion and ignorance, the lower modes of nature, is very predominating in us. And what is happening is that the knowledge what is coming through our intelligence, what we have acquired, has not been experienced by the person. Why? Because of the lower modes of nature. The lower modes of nature will never allow you to experience the higher knowledge. This is the difficulty. That Bhagavad Gita you may read, you may understand so many things. But if the consciousness is in the lower modes of nature, that will not do anything good to that person. So that is why it's necessary that simultaneously, along with studying Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, one should execute the devotional life also. Execute, practice that in one's own life. Otherwise, it will simply remain and it will cause more havoc later. And that is what has happened. As I said, that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are numerous examples to show this. What is the difference between the demons and the demigods? That difference is very clear. The demigods are in the mood of goodness. The demons are in the mood of passion. And that is what the difference is. Now, as far as knowledge is concerned, both the demigods and the demons have both got the knowledge. They both know what a spiritual knowledge means. But in the demigods' case, the spiritual knowledge is manifesting. In the demons' case, the spiritual knowledge is manifesting. Or is not manifesting, because all the knowledge that is gone in has not done anything good to him. Why? The reason is that, take for example, Hiranyakashipu's case. If you read in the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto, you will see this interesting story. Hiranyakashipu's brother died, Hiranyaksha, and after that, they had the same mother, and Kayadhu was the mother. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they went to their mother, and they were he was pacifying her. When the elder brother Hiranyaksha died, Hiranyakashipu was pacifying his mother and Hiranyaksha's wife as well. He was consoling both of them, saying to them that one who has taken birth in this world has to die, isn't it? He was asking her. So they were also saying yes. So there is a complete instruction of philosophy, Vedic philosophy, to them, to the mother, by the son, by Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu performed such penances no demigods have ever performed previously in their lifetimes. Such strong penances Hiranyakashipu performed. So what happened at the end? Hiranyakashipu, in spite of all these penances and austerities and spiritual knowledge, eventually he had to be killed by Narasimhadev. Narasimhamurti had to kill him. So it hasn't helped him very much to understand anything. This is what it means. The reason for that is that the knowledge what has he has acquired in his brain has not experienced by that person in his mind. Out of the two things, the mind and intelligence, we're discussing that this morning, that the intelligence is that aspect. Intelligence is that aspect which acquires the information from outside through the senses. We acquire the knowledgeness into us. But when the knowledge comes in, if that knowledge is not experienced by that person, which is done through the mind, that knowledge is not considered to be very helpful. It's not useful. That knowledge is not useful. So therefore, the role of the mind, the role of the intelligence, we have to understand very clearly how these two things work. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyani pararahu indriyebhya param mana manasastu parabuddhi buddhistu varadastu sa. Krishna is saying, Indriya, the senses has to be controlled by the mind. Mind has to be controlled by the intelligence. And everything above beyond that is the soul. So from there, it looks apparently that the mind has to be controlled by the intelligence. That's what is expected to be. But how to control the mind through intelligence, that process is unknown to us. And you will never find in the Bhagavad Gita anywhere Arjuna saying, "Oh Krishna, it is so difficult to control my intelligence." He will always say, "Oh, it is so difficult to control my mind." Why does Arjuna said like that? This question you have to ask. Because we consider, many, many people have this misconception that with intelligence we can control everything. No, it is not possible. Although through intelligence we can control the mind, unless the lower modes of nature leaves the mind and higher modes of nature manifest there, that knowledge or the control from intelligence will not work on the mind. The nature of the mind is, anything that has come inside through the intelligence, the mind starts analyzing it inside. That is the nature of the mind. It will start vichara dhara, or in other words, it is known as the thought process. The thoughts, different ideas comes to our mind. And when will this finish, we don't know. It is continuously happening inside. And even if it is spiritual spiritual thoughts, even if it is thoughts from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, if that thoughts have to have the desired effect on the person, the mind has to be situated in the mood of goodness. This is absolutely mandatory. It is absolutely essential that mood of goodness is necessary. So in the mood of goodness, that all this knowledge what has gone in, for example, demigods, take for the example demigods case. Demigods doesn't study as much as demons do. Demigods' knowledge even sometimes is lower than the demons, in many cases. In this world also you can see that sometimes. Some demons have much higher knowledge how to manipulate the material nature. They are very demoniac, but they know how to do it very nicely, the material nature, how to manipulate. That's a demoniac nature. So similarly, the demigods, although they can manipulate the material, they do not know as much as the demons. And demons know better. Demigods are better situated. Why? Whatever knowledge that has gone in, it has, because they are situated in the mode of goodness, that knowledge will give them on a long run, they will never go down. They will always go up. Whereas demons' case, even though they may perform, study everything, understand everything, because of the lower modes of nature, the chances are that they will go down. They will not go up. This is the difference between the demigods and the demons. The demons and the demigods have got the spiritual knowledge, but at the same time, demigods always go up. They don't go down in their life again. The reason being, because they are situated in the mode of goodness. Whatever little they have taken from Krishna, whatever little spiritual knowledge they have absorbed from Krishna, it's always experiencing inside and changing them all the time, is purifying them. Whereas on the other hand, for the demon, after 10,000 years of austerities, Hiranyakashipu learned only one thing, that how to go and destroy the whole world, turn the whole planet, 14 planetary system upside down. This is what Hiranyakashipu learned from his penances. So what good that penance has done for him? This is not only Hiranyakashipu's case, it is true with everyone who is pursuing spiritual life with a demonic mentality or with the lower modes of nature. And that is why sometimes even in spiritual life we experience the same thing, that on and off it happens all the time. After so many years of experience practicing spiritual life, sometimes lower modes of nature overpowers him and does not allow him, because the lower modes of nature has been so strongly influencing him that he is not able to fight against it, and he surrenders to that. So it is necessary that if one has to sustain in spiritual life, immediately Krishna says that this mode of goodness has to continue all the time. And without the mode of goodness, that is where association comes. That is where the importance of discrimination in associating with the different entities becomes important. So if this can happen in this way between the demons and the demigods, what is the difference in us? The human species is created in such a way, inside the mind, it is the same thing fight going on inside. The demons and the demigods are fighting there. Inside, there is nothing else is happening. On one side, all the qualities of a demon are there in us. On the other side, there are a few qualities of a demigod also in us, which is most of the cases very, very rare. It's mostly the other side which is stronger. And because this fight is going on inside, through the story of Ramayana and Mahabharata, all these great sages are telling us that this is what you have to deal with inside your mind. And once the mind is purified and come to the higher modes of nature, automatically you have won the battle. And this is the fight between the demigods and the demons that's going on inside. It is not a story that has been written that in the heavenly planets they have fought each other. What is going to make to us difference whether they fought 10,000 years or 50,000 years? It's going to matter. No. The reason for that is that from there, that fight between the demigods and the demons and their qualities is very much within us. Because by creation itself, demigods are in the mode of goodness, the demons are in the mode of ignorance and passion. We are a mixture of all things. All these three lower modes of nature are in us. And to some degree, sometimes mode of goodness also. So it is these three modes that is fighting inside our consciousness. So Krishna has explained this in the Bhagavad Gita. Very, very, very clearly he has mentioned, what are the qualities of a person who is in the mode of goodness? What are the qualities of a person who is in the mode of passion and ignorance? Abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vivasthiti dhanam damascha yogascha swadhyaya stava arjavam ahimsa satyam akrodam daya ashandirabhaishunam daya bhudeshalo luptam mardhavam hri achabalam teja kshamardim shaujam adroho adhimanida devi gasambadam devi abhijadasya bharada. Addressing Arjuna, Krishna listed a number of qualities, what is meant by the divine nature or the demigod's nature. And then he goes on explaining, Dambha udarpo bhimanascha krodham varushyame vaja ajnanam chabijadascha asurim devamashridaha. That asuri nature, the demonic nature, Krishna explains after that. So if you take list all these qualities, what Krishna has mentioned, the divine qualities and the demonic qualities, and start looking at it and reading yourself what is inside ourselves, then you will see that a lot of it is the wrong side or the demonic nature that is very much within us. So it is this purification is what is necessary. And that is why all the Shastras are pointing out to this one point very strongly, that unless one takes to this process of purification through the Krishna consciousness process, it is very difficult to come out of to get this knowledge manifested in oneself. And there are so many interesting things, stories related to that. And how did this whole thing develop? Develop means, for example, when the material nature has created us in this way, and we are fighting against each other all the time, and in our consciousness, this fight is going on. Now, if one is developing the mood of goodness, if one is developing the mood of goodness all the time, immediately you can see the change happening in that person's life. It's not very difficult to see. For example, if one This is just just to explain this, how the changes happens in a person. Then when one is in the mode of goodness, his life changes, altogether changes. It has to change. That's the mode of goodness. For example, at one time, we were sleeping up to 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning. And if somebody tells you, you should wake up in the morning, how can I get up now? It's too early to get up. Because this is the best time to sleep, morning, than 6 o'clock. What a wonderful time to sleep. And everything is so peaceful and quiet. I don't know what they call it. They call it as such an auspicious hour to sleep. But when the mood of goodness has developed in that person from the Bhagavadam or Bhagavad Gita or through the association of devotees, even if he wants to sleep at that time, he won't be able to sleep. This is one of the symptoms, that even by 3 o'clock in the morning, he starts feeling, oh, I should get up. What's the point in lying in the bed? And before the alarm rings, the devotee has got up and he has switched the alarm off before the alarm starts ringing. So why? Because the person has realized that early hours in the morning is meant for my spiritual activity, and that is what is lifting me up, that is what's elevating me. If I sleep those hours, I have lost everything in my life. The whole day is wasted. I'm not going to gain anything. Whereas somebody else who are in the lower modes, in passion and ignorance, his real life starts after 10 o'clock. Or when he comes out from the bathroom at 10, and then he goes to work or to college or whatever it is, and then his whole day is completely different. He comes more and more active by evening, and by late in the afternoon, he is into his full growth. And in other words, he has a different consciousness. Now, this is as far as sleep is concerned. Now, what to take about other things? The food habits. Previously, you wanted to eat everything. Everything that what you found tasty, you were able to eat. But as soon as the mood of goodness is built up inside, that desire also goes away from him. He changes that, something I have to eat now, something to keep this body together. But that is the desire for enjoying the tongue even has changed. And similarly, while getting up in the morning, and all the other activities in the day also will completely change that person. Because previously, he was under the control of Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna is the brother of Ravana. Ravana, Vibhishana and Kumbhakarna. Now these three characters in the Ramayana, they represent the three modes of nature. It is very, very distinctly clear how these three characters represent the three modes of nature. Vibhishana is composed to be the mode of goodness. He is in the mode of goodness. Ravana was the typical mode of passion, and Kumbhakarna was the mode of ignorance. So these three characters represents the three modes of nature. So what did Ramachandra do? Ramachandra did only one thing. Ramachandra took the help of Vibhishana, or the mode of goodness, and destroyed the other two, mode of passion and ignorance. Ravana and Kumbhakarna was destroyed with the help of Vibhishana. That's what Ramachandra did. So Valmiki in this reference is mentions that inside this also, in our own life, it is exactly what we have to do. Ravana also had spiritual knowledge. You should not forget that. Ravana was a very learned person. He was even considered as a Brahmana among the Rakshasas. That is how he is called. He was a Brahmana among the Rakshasa. He had the knowledge. But his mentality was that I have to steal Sita. This was his, somehow or the other I should do what I want to do. This attitude has come to him. So he decided to steal Sita. Who is Sita Devi? Sita Devi is nobody else. In the Shastra, it is mentioned she is the personification of the spiritual knowledge or the Brahma Vidya. So she has been stolen by Ravana, and Ravana wanted to keep her. So that was Ravana's mentality. But Ravana could not keep her. Eventually Ravana had to give up his own life. So from this you can see that the lower modes of nature has to be controlled by the higher modes of nature. This is why it's necessary. That if one does not do that, eventually lower modes of nature will overpower him, and then he will fall again. This is why simultaneously when one develops Krishna consciousness, one has to be extremely careful to maintain that higher modes of nature as well. In other words, there is an interesting story about this. And in that story, Shukracharya is the spiritual master of the demons. He is the spiritual master of the demons, Asuras. Their spiritual master. Asuras have got a spiritual master. Like Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the demigods. Similarly, demons have a spiritual master. He is Shukracharya. Shukracharya is known as a very, very learned person. Very learned and very, very capable also in many ways. You will see in the Bhagavatam, if you read, all these personalities are coming out and showing their strengths and different activities. You will be impressed by the activities of Shukracharya, how he managed Mahabali. So this Shukracharya was, one day one person met him and asked the Shukracharya this thing. You are such a nice person and a learned personality. Why do you go after these demons, serving them like this and by helping them in this way? All you know that they are not going to change. They will be like this all the time. You try to help them and try to do anything, try to bring them better. They are not going to change. He said to Shukracharya. Shukracharya said, I know that. I know that they are not going to change, he said. But then why do you do this, he said. They said to him. He said, you are a spiritual master and you are supposed to be serving brahmanas and personalities who are interested in spiritual life. On the other hand, you have taken the priesthood of these demons. And these demons, they never care for anybody anyway. They will do what they like. But they will utilize you or use you for whatever purpose they need you. Shukracharya smiled and said to this person who asked this question, he said, all what you said is true. But there is a secret in that, he said. So, normally I don't say this secret to anybody, he said. Shukracharya said to him, that I don't reveal this secret to anybody because it's dangerous for me if I reveal that secret, he said. So the person wanted to know. He became more inquisitive. And he asked Shukracharya, if you would kindly tell me what that is, because my mind is not, I'm not able to understand why you do this, he said. Shukracharya said to him, that I want to strengthen the demons all the time. Because if I strengthen the demons, the demigods will get frightened of them. When they are frightened of the demons, they will take shelter of Krishna. That is what I want. Because the moment demigods become strong, immediately they will forget Krishna. They become, pride will develop inside. Once the pride develops inside, the next thing they will do is that they will forget all their spiritual obligations. So from there you can see that Shukracharya's point was, I'm strengthening the demons all the time only for one reason. That when the demons get strong, they're going to attack the demigods. When they attack the demigods, demigods go to take shelter of Krishna. It's the natural way they do that. And because of that, demigods always have such a nice consciousness that they are always Krishna conscious. In other words, that Krishna consciousness is in them all the time. That is what is helping them. Whereas for the demons, there is no such control in their mind. Everything is open all the time. Whatever the mind dictates, they do it. They don't think anything beyond than that. So this kind of consciousness is necessary in spiritual life also, if we have to make that progress. That we have to have that fear that Krishna is the shelter and Krishna, dependence on Krishna is the best thing rather than being attacked by the lower modes of nature. And for doing that, and there is an example in the Bhagavatam that you can see that the moment Indra became powerful, he immediately forgot about his spiritual master. In the sixth canto, you can read that story. He has approached his spiritual master. He had forgotten about Brihaspati. When Brihaspati came there, he did not care even to pay his respects to him. To his own spiritual master, he completely acted as though he does not know him. Brihaspati took it very seriously and got upset and walked away from there and hid himself. And it is then that the demons became very strong. And you will notice there that the Indra had to find another spiritual master. He performed the sacrifices. Vishwarupa was installed as his spiritual master. And with Vishwarupa's help, he performed a sacrifice. Later on, he found out Vishwarupa was offering something to the demons also. And he had to kill his own spiritual master. The demigods got into so many problems after that. From this you can understand that the demigod's consciousness is better situated because they are able to take shelter of Krishna. And this is the secret Shukracharya revealed to him, that I strengthen the demons so that the demigods always take shelter of Krishna. That was the goal behind it. Shukracharya said, actually I wanted to help them, he said. If I don't do this, he said, the demigods will also forget Krishna. That is how they are. Every one of us, what to talk about, if demigods are like that, what's the situation with the human species? You can imagine that. So, in this way, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are the different things what mentioned, that how to get this mind out of the lower modes of nature and maintains in the higher modes of nature, which will help. That therefore the activities of the mind are discussed in detail. In the Bhagavatam it is expressed in detail. Why mind is described? Intelligence is not analyzed so much. Intelligence is not considered to be a big thing. Intelligence is good enough to absorb things, but if it is not affecting the person, that is why Kapila Muni says to Devahuti, Cheda Kalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Chalpano Madam Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya Iradamma Pumsi Muktaye. In one verse, Kapila told Devahuti, Lord Kapila said to Devahuti, Cheda Kalvasya Bandhaya. He didn't say intelligence Kalvasya Bandhaya. Whereas mind, he says, Cheda Kalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Chalpano Madam. As soon as the mind is absorbed, mind is affected by the principles of Krishna consciousness, Muktaye Chalpano Madam, that soul is automatically liberated. Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya. In fact, on the other hand, if the mind, if it is under the three modes of material nature, in the lower modes particularly, it will only lead him to bondage. So that is how Kapila Vasudev concluded their discussions with Devahuti Devi. And after the discussion was over, Kapila Vasudev left the ashram and went away from there. And after Kapila Muni's departure, Devahuti Devi sat in one place at her home and sitting there in the yoga position, yoga dharanayal, it says there, through yoga systems, she also gave up her body. That is how powerful those personalities were. So with this, the third canto finishes. And before we go into the fourth canto, I wanted to just read a few verses from Bhagavad Gita, because we spoke about mind so much. Now, this mind, what Krishna has spoken about the mind in the Bhagavad Gita, particularly in the fourth and fifth chapters, is something very interesting. It is worthwhile thinking about it. Why Krishna did not discuss about intelligence? In the modern world, we talk about intelligence so much. Intelligence, everybody is talking about intelligence. But Krishna is talking about the mind as more important than the intelligence. Why? Krishna has given the answer in the Bhagavad Gita. So I'll just read those few verses which are important. It says here that Nadatte kashyajil papam majaiva suhradam vibhu ajnanena vrudam jnanam tena muhyandi jantavaha. Krishna is saying there that this knowledge, spiritual knowledge, it is actually covered by ignorance. Ajnanena vrudam jnanam tena muhyandi jantavaha. That every living entity, Krishna says, the knowledge is already there, but it is covered by ignorance. This is how it is created. That is what it says. Nadatte kashyajil papam najaiva sukradam vibhu ajnanena avrutam jnanam tena muhyanti jandavaha. Nor does the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. This is how Krishna puts it. In the next verse, Jnanena ruddhavic atadat jnanam yesham nashinam almana tesham adhyadeval jnanam prakashayadidalparam. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nascence is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Then, tad buddhaya tadalmana tannishta talparayana gacchanni apunaravrutim jnananardhudakalmashah. When one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So Krishna explains that, and in another instance, Arjuna said to Krishna, Chanjalam himane Krishna, pramadad balaval dhranam, tastya aham nigraham manye vayor iva sudushkaram. For the mind is restless, turbulent, because Krishna spoke to Arjuna in the Sankhya chapter 6 that the mind has to be controlled. So it says here, for a mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate and very strong, O Krishna, and to subdue it seems to me more difficult than controlling the wind. And what was Krishna's answer? Krishna's answer was Sri Bhagavan Vaja, Asamshayam Mahabaho Mano Durnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Dukha Undeya Vairagyena Jagrihyadeyam. The Blessed Lord said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind. But it is possible by constant practice and by detachment. So you can see why Krishna says renunciation is necessary, detachment is necessary. Because if the mind is attracted to material objects, it becomes very difficult to control the mind. But if the mind which is free from material attachment, it is easier to control. So that is how, therefore in the Shastram, the mind is analyzed in depth. Just like, what is body? Body means it's a combination of various things. You've got hands, legs, and stomach, eyes, nose, teeth. If you separate them all out, then the body is finished. There is no more body. Or you can call it in another way. The body is made of flesh, blood, mucus, urine, stool, so many things. If you separate them all out, then where is the body? There is no body. Similarly, the mind is also analyzed in the Shastra in various ways through the three modes of nature. So Shastra will tell us that what these three modes of nature, how it will manifest in the mind, and how that will influence the mind, and what will be the reactions in the mind of particular modes of nature. That is how it is analyzed. So I'll just read those chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam and we'll finish the third canto today.
कर्मणा देवनेत्रेण जन्दुर्देहो भवत्तये स्त्रिया प्रविष्टमुदरं पुंसो रेदगणाश्रयाः कलनं त्वेगरात्रेण पञ्चरात्रेण विर्भुदं दशाहेनुकण्डोपेशेण्डं वा तदपरं मासेन निशिरोद्वाभ्यां बाह्यङ्ग्रात्यङ्गविग्रह नखलोमास्ति चर्माणि लिङ्गचित्रोद्भवस्त्रिवि चतुर्भि धाधवसप्त पञ्चमी क्षुत्रुदद्भव षड्विज्जरायिणा वीद कुक्षौ ब्राह्मीदिरक्षिणी माधुर्जग्धान्यमानाद्येधधातुरसंवदे शेदे विन्नुत्रयोर्गते स जन्तुर्जन्तुसंभवे कृमिभिः क्षतसर्वाङ्गसौकुमार्याल् प्रतिक्षणम् मूर्च्छामाप्नोतिरुक्लेशम् स्तत्रत्यै क्षुतिदेर्मुहुः कटुक्तिष्णोष्णोक्षलवण उष्म रुक्षाम्लादिभिरुल्बणैः मातृभुक्तै उपस्पृष्ट सर्वाङ्गोत्थितवेदना उल्बेन समृतस्तस्मिन्नन्द्रैश्च बहिरावृत आस्ते कृत्वा शिरकृक्षौ भग्नपृष्ठशिरोधरा अकल्पस्वाङ्गज्येष्ठायां शकुन्तमिव पञ्जरे तत्र लब्धस्मृतिर्दैवाल् कर्म जन्मशतोद्भवम् स्मरन् दीर्घमनुच्छ्वासं शर्म किं नाम विन्ददे आरभ्य सप्तमान्मासा लब्धबोधोऽभिवेपिद नैयत्रास्ते सुदिवादे इष्टा भूरिवसोदराः नाथमानऋषिभिर्सप्तव्रतिकृताञ्जलि स्तुमीदनं विक्लवय वाचा येनोदयर्पिद जन्तुरुवाच तस्योपसन्नमविदं जगदिच्छयाथमानादनोभुविजलच्चरणारविन्दं सोऽहं व्रजामि शरणम् अकुतोभयं मे येनेदृशि यदिरदर्श्य सतोऽनुरूपां यस्त्वत्र बद्धविकर्मभिरावृतात्मा उदेन्द्रियाशयमयीमालभ्यमायाम् आस्ते विशुद्धमभिकारमखण्डमोदमादप्यमानहृदये वसितं नमामि यपञ्चभूतरचितेरहितशरीरे छन्नो यथेन्द्रियगुणात्तचिदात्मकोऽहम् സേനാവിഗുണ്ടമഹിമാനമൃഷിം തമേനം വന്ദേ പരം പ്രകൃതിപൂരുഷയോ പുമാംസം യന്മായ ഒരു ഗുണർമ്മനിബന്ധനേസ്മിൻ സംസാരികേ പരിചരം തദഭിശ്രമേണ നഷ്ടസ്മൃതി പുനരയം പ്രവൃണീതലോകം യുക്യാകയാം മഹദനുഗ്രഹം അന്തരേണാം ജ്ഞാനം യദേ തദതാൽ കുതമസ്തദൈവസ്ത്രൈകാലികം സ്ഥിരചരേഷനുവർത്തിതാംശ തം ജീവകർമ്മപദവീം അനുവർത്തമാനാം സ്ഥാവത്രയോപശമനായ വയം ഭജേമാം ദേഹ്യന്യദേഹവിവരേ ജലരാഗ്നിനാസൽ വിണ്ണൂത്രകുപപതിതോ വൃഷതപ്തദേഹ ഇച്ഛന്നിതോ വിവസിതം ഗണയൻ സ്വമാസാൻ നിർവാസ്യതേ കൃണനീർ ഭഗവൻ കഥാനു യേനേദൃശം ഗതിമസോ ദശമാസ്യമീഷാം സംഗ്രാഹിതപുരുതയേന ഭവാദൃശേന സ്വേനൈവ ദുഷ്യതുകൃതേന സദീനാഥ കോനാമതൽപ്രതി വിനാഞ്ജലിമസ്യ കുര്യാൽ പശ്യത്യയം ദുഷണയാനു സപ്തവധ്രി ശാരീരകേതം ശരീരപരസ്വദേഹേ യ സൃഷ്ടയാം സതമഹം പുരുഷം പുരാണം പശ്യേ ബഹിർഹൃദയ ചൈത്യമിവ പ്രതീതം സോഹം വസന്നപി വിഭോ ബഹുദുഃഖവാസം ഗർഭാനന്ദർജിഗമുഷേ ബഹിരന്ധകൂപേ യത്രോപയാതം ഉപസർപ്പതി ദേവമായാം മിഥ്യാമതിർയനു സംസൃതിചക്രമേതൽ തസ്മാദഹം വിഹിത വിക്ലവമുദ്ധരിഷ്യ ആത്മാനമാശുതമസസുഹൃദാത്മനൈവ ഭൂയോ യഥാ വ്യസനമേതനേകരം ബ്രഹ്മാമേ ഭവിഷ്യതു ഉപാസിത വിഷ്ണുപാദാഹ കപിലവാച ഏവം ക്രമദീർഘമേ ദശമാസി സുസ്തുവൻ ഋഷി സദ്യക്ഷുപത്യവാചീനം പ്രസൂത്യൈ സൂതിമാരുത തേനാവൃഷ്ടസഹസാ കൃത്വാ വാക്ഷരമാതുര വിനിഷ്കാമികച്ഛേണ നിരുച്ഛ്വാസോ ഹതസ്മതി പതിതോ ഭുവി സന്മൂത്രേ വിഷ്ട ഭൂരിവജേഷ്ഠതേ രോരു ഏതിഗതേ ജ്ഞാനം വിപരീതാം ഗതിംഗത പരച്ഛന്ദം വിദുഷാ പുഷ്യമാണോ ജനേന സ അനഭിപ്രേതമാപന്നം പ്രത്യാഖ്യാതു മഹീശ്വര ഷടയിദോഷി പര്യങ്കേ ജന്തു സ്വേദജദൂഷിനേ നേശകണ്ടുയേനാംഗം അസനോത്ഥാന ജ്യേഷ്ഠനേ తుదంధ్యామత్వజందం శ్యామం మషయా మల్కునాదయ రుదన్నం విగత జ్ఞానం క్రమయా క్రమిగం యథ ఇత్యేవం శైశవం భుక్త్వా దుఃఖం పౌగండమేవ చ అలబ్ధావీప్సితో జ్ఞానాదిగ్ధమన్యషుషార్పితే సహదేహేన నాయన వర్ధమానేన మన్యున కరోతి విగ్రహం కామీ కామీ ఛందాయ చాత్మనా భూతై పంచవిరారబ్ధే దేహే దేహీయబుధో సకల్ అహమేత్య సంగ్రహం కరోతి గుమతిర్మతి తదర్థం గురుదే కర్మ యల్భర్దో యాది సంసృతిం యోని యాది తదు క్లేశం అవిద్యా కర్మబంధనా యద్య సర్వే పదివన శిష్ణోదరికృతోధ్యమై ఆస్తిదోరమదే జంతుస్తమో విశది పూర్వమల్ సత్యం శౌచం దయా మౌనం బుద్ధిశ్రీర్యశక్షమ శమోదమో భగవశ్చేది ఎల్సంగాద్యాది సంక్షయం తేషు శాంతేషు మూఢేషు గండిదాల్పస్వసాదుషు సంగం నగుర్యాచోచ్యేషు యోషి క్రీడామృగేషు చ నదాసి భవేన్నో బంధశ్చాన్యప్రసంగద యోషిల్ సంగాద్యద పుంసో యథా తల్సంగి సంగద ప్రజాపతి స్వామిఖిరం దృష్ట్వా తద్రూపదర్శిన రోహిల్ భూదాంసోన్యథా వదక్షరూపీ హతత్రవ తల్ సృష్ట్వా సృష్టసృక్షేషు కోన్యుఖండీదీ పుమాన్ ఋషిన్ నారాయణం దే యోషిన్మయ్యేహమాయయాం బలమే వశ్యమాయాయాం శ్రీమయ్యాం జైనో దిశాం యా కరోదిపదా క్రాంతి భూ విజృంభేణ కేవలం సంగం నగుర్యాల్ ప్రమదాసు జాదు యోగస్య పారంపర్యమాడి రుక్షు మల్సేవయా ప్రతిలబ్ధాత్మలాభో వదంతియా నిరయద్వారమస్యాం యోగయాదివనేశ్వరమాయాం యోషిదేవమి నిర్మిద తామీక్షేదాత్మనో మృత్యుం ప్రణయకూపమివామృతం యా మన్యదే పదిమోహా మన్మాయామృషభాయని స్త్రీత్వం శ్రీసంగద ప్రాప్తో ఇత్తాపత్యగ్రహవృత్తాపత్యగ్రహప్రదాం తామాత్మనో విజానీయాల్ పత్యవత్యగ్రహాత్మకం దైవోపసాధనమృత్యం మృగయోర్గాయనం యథా దేహే నీవూనా లోకాలోకమనుప్రజన్ భుంజానమే కర్మాణి కరోత్యవిగతం భువాన్ జీవో హ్యానివో దేహో భూదేంద్రియ మనోమయం తన్నిరోధస్ మరణమావిర్భావస్తు సంభవా ద్రవ్యోపలబ్ధిస్థానస్ ద్రావ్యే క్షాయోగ్యతల్పంజత్వహం ఉత్పత్తిర ద్రవ్యదర్శనం యథోష్ణో ద్రవ్యవయవం దర్శనాయోగ్యత తదైవ చక్షుషో ద్రష్టో ద్రష్టృత్వాయోగ్యత అనేయో తస్మాన్న కార్య సంశ్రాసంద్రాసో న కార్పణ్యం న సంభ్రమ బుద్ధ్వా జీవగతిం ధీరో ముక్తసంగశ్చరేదిహ సమ్యక్ దర్శనయా బుద్ధ్యా యోగ వైరాగ్యయుక్తయా మాయా విరచితే లోకచరణ్యస్య కళేవరం ఇది శ్రీమద్భాగవతి మహాప్రాణి తృతీయ స్కంది కావ్యోపాఖ్యానం జీవగతిర్నామం ఏకత్రింశోధ్యాయాం. సో దట్ వాస్ ది చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ 31. సో విల్ రీడ్ 32 ఆల్సో. శ్రీ కవిల ఉవాచ అదయో గ్రహమేదీయాన్ కర్మాణి వావసన్ గృహే కామమర్థం జర్మాన్ స్వాన్ దోగ్ధిభూయ పిపర్తినాన్ సజావి భగవద్ధర్మాన్ కామమూర్ఫరాన్ ముఖ ఏకదు గుర్ధేవాన్ పితృం శశ్రుభేయానియాం తచ్ఛందయా కాదమీ పితృదేవం దత్వా చాంద్రవసం లోకం సోమభా పునరేషి యదా చాహీంద్రశయ్యాయాం శేదేనందాసనోహరి తదా లోకాలయం యామి తమేది గ్రహమేధినాం యే సుధర్మాన దుఃఖ్యంతి ధీరా కామార్థహేతవే నిస్సంగాన్యస్తకర్మాణం ప్రశాంతం శుద్ధచేతసా నివృత్తిధర్మనిరతాం ధర్మమా నిరహంకృత స్వధర్మాఖ్యేన సత్వేన పరిశుద్ధేన చేతసా సూర్యద్వారేణ దేయాంతి పురుషం విశలో ముఖం పరావరేషం ప్రగతి వస్తు అల్పత్యంత భావనం దివరాంతవసానేయా ప్రళయం బ్రహ్మణోస్తుదే తావదధ్యాశ్రయోగం పరస్య పరిచిందగా శ్మాంభోనలా నిలవేన్మణి ఇంద్రియాత్మం భూతాది పరివృతం మృత సంజహీషు అవ్యాగృతం శ్రీవర్హి గుణత్రయాల్పం కాలం పరాఖ్యమనుభూయ వర స్వయంభూ ఏం పరేతి భగవంతమని ప్రవిష్టాం యే యోగినో జితమరుణ్మనసో విరాగ తేనైవ సాగమృతం పురుషం పురాణం బ్రహ్మ ప్రధాన ఉభయాన్ని గదాభిమానం రథంగం సర్వోదానం ఉత్పత్మిష్కృతాలయం శివానుభావం శరణం ప్రతిభావిని భావిని ఆద్య స్థిరచరాణం యో వేదగర్భసహర్షివి యోగేశ్వరై కుమారాద్యే సిద్ధై యోగ ప్రవర్తకై వేదదృష్ట్యాభిమానిన సంగోనీ కర్మణం కర్తృత్వాల్సగుణం బ్రహ్మ పురుషం పురుషం క్షమ ససంశ్రుత్య మున కాలే కాలే కాలని కాళేశ్వరమూర్తినాం జాదే గుణ విధిగిరే యథాపూర్వం ప్రజాయనే ఐశ్వర్యం బాణమిష్టం జాదేమి ధర్మ వినిర్మిదం నిషే విమనరాయాని గుణ విధిగరే సతి ఏ తుహాసక్తమనసాక్రమశుశ్రుతయాని కుర్వంత్యప్రతిషిద్ధాని నిత్యాన్ని విజగ్లశ్నశ రజసా కుంఠమనస కామ ఆత్మానోచితేంద్రియ పిదం జనజనవినం గృహేష్విరద అభిరదాశయ త్రైవర్గీ ఆస్తే పురుషాభిముఖా హరిమేధస కథాయాం కథనీయోర్విక్రమస్తి మధుద్దూషా నూనం దైవేన విహదాయే జాప్యత కదాస్తుతం హిత్వా శూన్యసల్ఘాదా పురీషమివిడ్భుజ ఇవ విడ్భుజ దక్షిణేన పదార్యం నా పితృలోకం ప్రజందిరే ప్రజామును ప్రజాయనే శ్మశానందక్రియా కృదా తదస్తే క్షీణ సుకృదా పునర్లోకమిమం సది పదంతి వివశో దేవై సద్యో విభ్రంశిదోదయ తస్మాత్వం సర్వభావేన భజస్సు పరమేశ్వరం తల్గుణాశ్రయ భక్త్య భజనీయ పదాంబుజం వాసుదేవే భగవతి భక్తి యోగ ప్రయోజిత జనయత్యాశు వైరాగ్యం జ్ఞానం యద్భ్రమదర్శనం యథాచేతవర్తేషు సమేషింద్రియవృత్తి నవిగృహ్ణాదివైషమ్యం ప్రేమ ప్రేమిత్యుత సదైవ ఆత్మానమాత్మానం నిస్సంగం సమదర్శనం హే యోపాదే రహితమరుడ్ ఆరుఢం పదమీక్షదే ജ്ഞാനമാത്രം പരബ്രഹ്മ പരമാത്മീശ്വര ഭവാൻ ദൃശ്യാദ്വിപൃഥഗ്ഭാവേർ ഭഗവാനേകമീയതേ യഥാമാനീയോഗിന സമഗ്രഹേണ യോഗിന യുജ്യതേഭിമതോ ഹ്യർത്ഥോ യഥാ സംഗസ്തു കൃത്സ്നശാം ജ്ഞാനമേകം പരാജിനി ഇന്ദ്രിയ പ്രണർഗുണം അവഭാത്യർത്ഥരൂപേണാഭ്രാന്ത ശബ്ദാഭി ധർമ്മിണാം യഥാ മഹാനഹം രൂപസ്ത്രീയിൽ പഞ്ചവിധസ്വരാൾ ഏകാശുവിധസ്തസ്യാമുരണ്ടം ജഗദ്യന ഏതദ്വൈ ശ്രദ്ധയാ ഭക്തിയാ യോഗാഭ്യാസേന നിത്യശാ സമാഹി ആത്മാതിസംഗോ വിരജ്ഞാ വിജയമശ്വരി ഇത്യേതൽ കരിയം ഗുരു വിജ്ഞാനം തൽബ്രഹ്മദർശനം യേനാവുദ്യതേ തത്വം ഭഗവതേ പുരുഷസ്യ ജയ ജ്ഞാനയോഗശ്ചമന്വിഷ്ടോ നൈപുണ്യോ ഭക്തിലക്ഷണ ദ്വയോരപ്യേകമേവാർത്ഥോ ഭഗവത് ശബ്ദലക്ഷണ യഥേന്ദ്രിയേ പൃഥക്ഭാരേതാർത്ഥോ ബഹുഗുണാശ്രയ ഏകോനാനേരി തദ്വൽ ഭഗവാൻ ശാസ്ത്രവർമ്മവി ക്രേയോ ഹൃദവർദ്ധാനി സർവസ്വാധ്യായ വർഷനി ആത്മേന്ദ്രിയജയനാഭി സന്യാസേന ചകർമ്മണം യോഗേന വേദാംഗേന ഭക്തിയോഗേന ജൈവഹി ധർമ്മേണോഭയ ചിന്തയനായ പ്രവൃത്തി നിവൃത്തിമാൻ ആത്മതത്വബോധേന വൈരാഗ്യേന ദൃഢേന ച ഈയതേ ഭഗവാനെ വിസ്തഗുണോ നിർഗുണ സുന്ദരൽ പ്രാവോചം ഭക്തിയോഗസ്യ സ്വരൂപം നീചതുർവിധം കാലസ്യ ച വ്യക്തഗത യോന്തർഥ അവരിചന്ദുഷോ ജീവസ്യ സംസനിർബർഹിവീ അവിദ്യാകർമ്മ നിർമ്മിത യാസ്വംഗ പ്രവശം ആത്മാ നവേദ ഗതിമാത്മന നേതൽഖലായ ഉപതിന്നെ യോപതിശേൻ അവിനിഹിതായ ഗ്രഹിച്ചൽ ന ശബ്ദായ ന ഭിന്നായ ദൈവധർമ്മദ്വജായ ച ശ്രീമദ്ഭഗവതീമഹാപുരാണേതൃതീയസ്കന്ധേ കാവിലയോപാഖ്യാനേ ത്രിംശോധ്യായ So, there's one more chapter for the third candle, which I'll read in the next Sunday. So, if there's any questions or comments.
You said in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind, the very detail of the control, drives deeper than the wind. You know, Krishna said one way of controlling is detachment. And so, I think like other...
Yes. I will read the translation, what Krishna says. Two things Krishna said. Abhyasa enidu kaunteya, by abhyasa. Abhyasa means by practicing. By practice, vairagyena cha grihyate, by detachment. So these two things, abhyasam and vairagyam, Krishna repeats that in the Bhagavatam also later, while talking to Uddhava. So, that is, Krishna says, it is not that it is not possible, it is possible by these two processes. But you can see that no matter how hard you try, we don't have that strength to control the mind to such a degree. In spite of our best efforts, mind will go. So, therefore, in the Bhagavatam, the solution is that if one engages in Krishna conscious activities, the mind will stay under control. It will not go astray. It will not take you to other worlds, other different conditions. So Krishna consciousness can help, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that this most difficult thing, Durjayanam Aham Mana, Krishna says, you know, that mind can be brought under control in course of time when the purification happens with the strength of Krishna consciousness, that will happen. So, if you want to control mind on your own, it is very difficult without Krishna's help. That is what it means. In other words, detachment, we have to try to develop that attachment, which is essential in spiritual life. Because if the mind is too absorbed in the activities of this world, there is no possibility of any spiritual life happening in that mind. That's why what we find that even big personalities in this world who are very powerful in their wealth or in their fame or in their position or whatever that is, for them spiritual life is hard because in their condition the mind is absorbed in so many things and it is difficult to pull the mind out of it and to offer it to Krishna. That's very difficult. So therefore they have to offer their wealth to Krishna, or they have to offer other things. But Krishna is more pleased when one offers his mind to Krishna more than anything else. Krishna is not expecting that everyone will offer millions of pounds to Krishna. Krishna doesn't need any of those things. But Krishna appreciates that he sees the devotee's heart
Very clearly Krishna mentions this in the Ekadasa Skandham. He says, when you offer anything to me, he uses the word, bhogairalpanam almani. Krishna says, you should think, who is enjoying that? Krishna is enjoying. Anything when you offer, bhogairalpanam almani, that inside us, situated as a supreme soul, Krishna is acknowledging what you are offering to Krishna. So therefore, even while taking prasadam, this is why we have to say the prayers to Krishna. That who is enjoying actually inside? It is the super soul situated inside. Krishna is relishing that, that you have acknowledged to him that it is his mercy that you are accepting now in this body. So like this, bhogair almanam almani is a very, 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 very potent statement. Bhogair almanam almani. Bhoga means enjoying something. Almanam almani, that is in the super soul inside. He is behind it, not our sense gratification. So Krishna says that with constant practice in this way, in a Krishna conscious way, you can bring the mind under control. Whereas if you want to do it on your own, without Krishna's support, it may not happen. You will always lose the battle. That is what Krishna is saying there.
Sorry, just one more. What about some of the people, you know, I mean, they sometimes what we call the out of the mind, you know, they're really fed up and mad, you know.
Who is not fed up? Everybody is fed up.
You know,
only thing is somebody is more fed up than somebody, yeah, less fed up than.
Some people, you know, just,
yeah.
Just stop and really
yes.
Sick of the mind. You know?
Yes.
What is the answer for
yes,
them?
Their position is very difficult because in that condition, they have a difficult situation because of the mind being gone. Mind has gone out of control. In such situation, only if they receive a mercy from a devotee, by the strength of the holy name, that person will benefit spiritually. Otherwise, it's very difficult. Because he's not able to absorb. Virtually, he has no mind. He has lost his mind. That's what we say. So, when the mind is in sound condition, because this mind also, you can't guarantee it will stay like this forever. You can see, last week we were talking about this. When you are a young boy, 3 or 4 years old, you are very happy, isn't it? Playing all the time, parents looking after you, providing everything. And everything is nice, fun. You have no responsibility in this world. The same person, when he gets into about 75 or 80, you look at him, and you see, according to our law in this world, he should be happier, isn't it? Because if this world is a happy place, from year 3 to year 80, he should have become extremely happy, isn't it? By going through this whole life of in this world, he should come to a situation of extreme happiness. That's what is expected. But is it true? Is that what happens? By that 70 or 80 years old, having suffered everything in this world, all the happiness of the householder life, all the happiness of all the other things what we have done in this world, at that time, it is nothing, that body is nothing but just a bunch of a distress. It's a complete, you can say, a block created out of distress, nothing else in that mind at that moment. You can see many, many old people. That is why they become so unhappy in their life. Externally, they try to put a show outside. Everything is going on nicely in this world. Still, they are having their holidays and happy family life and everything. But by the experience what the person had, if he is a little bit thoughtful, you can see that there is no happiness he has. All that he was experiencing, distress after distress after distress, one after the other. And then, by this 80 years old person, all he has got to offer to this world is nothing but distress, nothing else. So, it is like that. It is like that. So, the simple thing is that intelligence is to understand these things, see these things clearly in ourselves, and see what is the right thing to do. And Krishna is telling us that if it is like that, if you cultivate spiritual life and limit your material desires, limit your material desires, Krishna is never saying that you should not eat, or you should not sleep, or you should not have clothes to wear, or you should not have even family life. Somehow or the other, we all got caught up in that. We can't do anything about it now. But if you are thoughtful, that if one can avoid it, Krishna even recommends that. That's the best thing to do. But if somehow or the other, if one has fallen into householder life, Doesn't matter man or woman, it works both ways, it doesn't matter. So if it has fallen in the household life, still Krishna says that you must keep this point in the mind all the time, that going towards back to Krishna is the goal of life, not improving the material conditions all the time. Suppose I have a house to live, tomorrow I should have a £2 million house and then another £5 million. Simply increasing this material existence, Krishna says, will continuously generate new bodies in this life, in this person. So that is what we get the message from there. That stopping this material activities, minimizing it, in other words, everything is necessary. You have to eat, you have to sleep, all these things are there. But at the same time, it should be done with this understanding that only what is necessary should be used, nothing more than that. More than what is required, one should not even accumulate. That's what they say. So, that with that consciousness, Krishna says, Kapila Vasudeva says to Yahudi Devi also, that if you work in that mood, nothing will go wrong. Eventually, at some point in time, as soon as you become serious about your understanding of Krishna consciousness, the mood of goodness will help that person to understand, and the effect of all the Shastra will manifest in that person.
I was talking to you a few weeks ago, you mentioned sometimes people, they're too inert, some too detached, and this affects
yes.
their ability to understand Krishna's
mm-hmm.
pastime.
Yeah.
And today you mentioned how householders,
yes.
they're too attached,
mm.
they're not detached enough,
yes.
and that also impedes their spiritual life.
Yes.
So what's the stable ground?
Stable ground is that a householder should have to do the minimum things. He has to, as I said, when he lives in the house, he has to live like a guest. In other words, he should not think, this is my castle and I'll build my castle here and enjoy my life. That attitude is wrong, Krishna says. Krishna also says that attachment is very difficult to overcome. You know, nobody can give up this attachment. Material attachment is so strong, especially in the householder's life. In brahmachari and sannyasi has a little freedom to because he hasn't got anything to get attached to. That protects him from that he doesn't have to worry about it so much because there's nothing to get attached to. Whereas householder, all his life he has worked to earn money, to get his house, to get his car and to so many other positions. And this attachment will not go away easily. And so therefore, Krishna is saying there that attachment is there, but that attachment one should minimize, not increase it. Already you are entangled. That's what, in other words, Krishna is saying. You're already entangled, but don't increase that entanglement. And modern civilization works in the opposite way. The more you entangle, the more you are successful in life. Is it not?
Mm.
That's the way the world is teaching us to do. Increase your consumption, everything, and increase your needs so that the wheel of industry keeps rolling, moving. And so unfortunately, that is the wrong side of it. What can you do? And it is within this, you have to develop spiritual life also. In the middle of all this moving in wheel of industry, you have to develop your spiritual life. So you can see how difficult it is that the lower modes of nature is standing all around you to affect you all the time. That is why even after many years of cultivating renunciation and detachment and everything, still in a second you fall off the wheel.
The three modes of material nature, I'm sort of confused by what I've been here. So, sometimes we hear that we're controlled by the three modes of material nature.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we say we're acting in the three modes of material nature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, what is it? And obviously, karma must have, our past karma and so on, must have
mm-hmm.
an effect on how we act
yeah.
as well.
Yes, yes.
And then, do we move from, if we're acting in passion,
mm-hmm.
love of passion, do we say to ourselves, well, we should be trying to act in the light of good?
Yeah. Yes. The overriding factor above everything is karma. Karma has the highest strength influence on us, no doubt about it. It is karma determines our birth, where we are born, in what conditions we are born. Karma also determines what amount of happiness and distress one will have in this world. Now, in this law of karma, the way things happen is that the modes of nature will fall in its place to suit your karmic reactions. In other words, when you have to experience certain karma, you will be pushed into that by the laws of, by the modes of nature. Somehow or the other, it will push you to that situation. But that does not mean that everything is lost. That it is not like that. That although karma may be sometimes very demanding on our life, in many ways it can cause so much distress in many times, and sometimes a little bit happiness also. And three modes of nature will work in such a way that the karma, what you are supposed to experience here, or the result of your karmic reactions, whatever that is, that will manifest you through that modes of nature. Because these are known laws, which is unknown to us, how these things work. But in Krishna's law, everything works. That's what we see. Nothing fails any time. Even right from the Brahma Samhita, it says there that even the higher planets, they rotate in this creation according to Krishna's instruction. They can't even move an inch from that. That is what the scientists will say. Oh, this won't hit the other planet. Their argument is completely different. But Brahma Samhita says that they have been told that position to stay there by Krishna's arrangement. And they have to stay. There is no question of moving from there. So, if it is like that, what should one do? The lower modes of nature is affecting us. This is where Bhagavatam is telling us how one can improve one's modes of nature by his effort. The modes of nature, lower modes of nature particularly, how does it happen? Due to association, nothing else. It is the association that makes a person's modes changes. And Krishna has also given certain things. In the Vajraskandham it mentions there, what actually helps a person to change the mode of nature. There are so many things mentioned. Sometimes due to our helpless situation, we are not able to do everything, what Krishna says there. And that is automatically you can see the result also. That sometimes you see devotees saying the same thing. You can hear this all the time. They'll say, I have been chanting Hare Krishna for 25 years. And even then still my mind is going away in different directions. It is not the fault of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. The fault is within me. That I have been chanting, but I was chanting completely affected by my own material desires and the lower modes of nature. That was what was controlling me. So the Mahamantra did not have any impact on me even after 25 years. Why? I have been sticking to my Rajogunam so strongly that Rajogunam never allowed me to do anything significantly. That mind is not focused on Krishna. He is not able to remember Krishna even once during the 16 rounds of chanting. Once the mind has not thought about Krishna. It has mechanically done that chanting. But at the same time, the result was that in the end you find after 25 years you feel that you are where you have started from the beginning. So this modes of nature can change, and Krishna says that it can be done. And Krishna has given certain instructions in the 11th canto about it. But sometimes, due to our inability, we find it difficult to do that because of various reasons what we have put into this world. So there, the only option Krishna says there, pray to me, he says. You become more and more surrendered in your heart to me and approach me with that humility. Krishna says, I will sort that out one day for you. You may be in any situation, Krishna says, doesn't matter. Krishna says, when while leaving this body, Krishna has even taught us how to pray to him. What more can he do? He has even told us how to pray to him. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that there is a prayer Krishna is teaching the devotee. Shiro me malpadayo hrutva bahu bhyanja parasparam. Krishna says, lie down in front of me. And a householder particularly should have deities at home. He should worship the deity. And he says, because the householder is entangled in so many wheelings and dealings outside in his lifetime. He says, Krishna says, maybe all that is happening, but still, he should come in front of me. He's talking about the deity. And saying, Shiro me malpadayo hrutva. Whatever he can offer, he should offer to Krishna. Particularly the food, he should offer to Krishna. Now offering to Krishna and performing the offerings, everything done nicely, he should lie down in front of Krishna, hold Krishna's lotus feet by both the hands and say to me, Krishna says to the devotee, he said to me like this, even he said, have you seen anybody who is teaching a person what to do in spiritual life more than what Krishna has done? Shiro me malpadayo hrutva bahu bhyanja parasparam, Hold both your hands on my feet. Krishna says, Prabhannam Pahimam Isham. Krishna is saying to him, tell me like this, that I am frightened. So I will ask you, what are you frightened about? Bhidam Mrityugraharnaval. I am only frightened of one thing. What is that? The death is waiting. I am only frightened of death. Say this to me, and rest of it I will take care. This is what Krishna says. So you can see that the Krishna is not saying that because we are put into awkward situations in life sometime, particularly in householder's life, it's always difficult. There are so many things pulling us in different directions. But Krishna says, don't make householder life of everything in life, but use the householder life to get out of it at one point. And they give the example that just like a king, he sits inside his fort and fights the battle. Similarly, the householder life is the fort for the householder. He should sit inside and he should win the battle by sitting inside that fort. He knows very well that he is attacked from all sides and is in that condition there. But still, Krishna says that it is still an opportunity to develop Krishna consciousness. So the material conditions sometimes may not be favorable, always may not be favorable. But that doesn't matter. He says, if your heart is open and sincere, it will come above everything else. Then even beyond the other external things, the heart is much more important, Krishna gives to. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
We were talking from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the third canto, and eventually Lord Kapila gave the understanding to Devahuti Devi that she has to practice the process of Bhakti Yoga, and to support that Bhakti Yoga process, Kapila also instructed Devahuti in the process of Ashtanga Yoga and Sankhya Yoga as well. So after that, Kapila left home and went to the forest along with other disciples, and Devahuti Devi, after receiving these instructions from Kapila, practiced the process what she was instructed by Kapila Vasudev, and eventually she also gave up her body. This is how the third canto finishes. So we have just one chapter to read from the third canto, which is the last chapter of the third canto, and after that we move on to the fourth canto. So I'll just read that chapter.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Shri Maitreya Vacham Evam Nishamya Kapilasya Vajo Janitri Sa Kardamasya Daida Kila Devahuti Vistrastha moha prala tamahi pranamyam pushtavadatva vishayangita siddhi bhumim Shri Devahudiri vajam adhapya jonda salile shayanam bodhendriya arthalpamayam babuste guna pravaham sarashesha bhijam dadhyau swayam yajjadarabjajadaham saeva vishwasya bhavan vidhate guna pravahe navibhakta virya Sargadyaniho vidada bisandi Alme Shirotarkya Sahastra Shakti Satvam Pradome Jadarena Natha Katham Yasyo Dharame Dadasil Vishwam Yugande Vadavatra Megam Shede Svamaya Shishuram Krivana Tvam Deha Dandram Prashavaya Mapmanam Nidesha Bhajam Javibho Vibhudaye Yadha Vadara Stava Sukara Dayam Stadaya Mapyatma Prabhodale Vatophalabdhaye Yannamane Yashravananu Kirtanam Udyal Prahanadvyar Smaranadavikvajil Shwadovi Sadhya Samanaya Kalpavi Udapunaste Bhagavanma Darshanal Ahobadashubajoto Gariyan Yajikhuagre Vartade Namadubhyam Tebustavaste Juhuvu Sasnuraya Brahmano Jur Namagunandiyete Tamtuamaham Brahmavarambhumamsam Pratyaksrodasyatmani Samvibhavyam సుతేజసా ద్వస్తగుణ ప్రవాహం వందే విష్ణుం కపిలం వేదగర్భం శ్రీమైత్రేయవాచాం. ఇదిలో భగవాన్ ఏం కపిలాఖిమరపుమన్ వాచా విక్లవ్యత్యాహ మాదరం మాతృవత్సలాం శ్రీకపిలవాచాం. మార్గేణానేన మాదస్తే సుసేవ్యనోదితేన మే ఆస్తిదేన పరాం కాష్టాం అజిరా దేవరోల్స్యసీం. శ్రద్ధల్స్వైదన్మదం మహ్యం జుష్టం యల్భ్రమవాదిమి యనమామభవం యాయ మృత్యుమృచ్ఛంది తద్విదాః శ్రీమైత్రేయవాచాం. ఇది ప్రదర్శ భగవాన్ సదిం నామాత్మనోగతిం స్వమాత్రా బ్రహ్మవాదిన్యో కపిలోన్మదో యేయౌ. సాచాభిధనయోక్తేన యోగాదేశేన యోగయోక్తస్మిన్నాశ్రమాబీడే సరస్వత్యాసమాహితాం అభీష్ణావగహ కపిశన్ జడిలన్ కుటిలాళగన్ ఆత్మానం జోగ్రదవసా బిభ్రతి చిరణం కృషం. ప్రజాపదే కర్దమస్య తపోయోగ విజృంభినం సుగార్హస్య మనోపమ్యం ప్రార్థ్యం వైమానికైరవీ. హయభేణ నిభాషయ్యాదాన్నారుక్మపరిచ్ఛద ఆసనాని జహైమాని సుస్పర్శ ఆస్తరణాని జాం. స్వచ్ఛస్ఫటియగుడ్డేషు మహామారకదేషు జాం రత్నప్రదీమాభన్నీరళనా రత్నసంయుగాం. గృహోద్యానం కుసుమదైరమ్యం బహుమరద్రుమై ఊజరిహ్వంగమిదనం గాయన్మథమధుప్రదం. ఎత్ర ప్రవిష్టమాత్మానం విభుదానుజరాజగు వాప్యామల్పిలగంధిన్యాం కర్దమేనోబలాళితం. హిత్వా తదీప్సితమ సమం అప్యాఖండలయోషిణాం కించిచ్చకారవదనం పుత్ర విశ్లేషణ విశేషణాదురాం. వనం ప్రవ్రజి దేవత్యావత్తి విరహాదురా జ్ఞాదాత్వాపి భూమ్నష్టే వల్సే గవివ వల్సలాం. తమేవధ్యాయి దేవమవిత్యం అబత్యం కపిలం హరిం బభూవాచిరదో వల్స నిస్పృహా తాదృశే గృహే. ధ్యాయతి భగవద్రూపం యదాహ ధ్యానగోచరం సుదప్రసన్నవదనం సమస్తం వ్యస్తచిందయాం. భక్తి ప్రవాహ యోగేన వైరాగ్యేన బలీయస యుక్తానుష్ఠాన జాతేన జ్ఞానేన బ్రహ్మహేదునాం. విశుద్ధేన తదాల్పానమాల్పనా విశ్వతో ముఖం స్వానుభూత్యాధిరోభూతం మాయాగుణ విశేషణం. బ్రహ్మణ్యవస్థితమదిర్భగవత్యాత్మసంశ్రయే నివృత్తజీవావతి క్షీణ క్లేశాప్తనుబ్రదీం. నిత్యారూఢ సమాధిత్వాన్ పరావృతగుణభ్రమ నస్మారదాల్పానం స్వప్నే దృష్టమివోక్తిదాః. తద్దేహ వ్రత పోషోప్యకృశ్చాధ్య సంభవాల్ బభౌమలైరవచ్ఛన్నం సధూమయోపావగాం. స్వాంగం ద్వయోగమయం ముక్తయేషం గదాంబరం దైవగుప్తం భువోదే ప్రసుదేవ ప్రవిష్టనీం. ఏవం సా కవిలోక్తేన మార్గేణాజిరద పరం ఆత్మానం బ్రహ్మనిర్వాణం భగవంతమవావహాం. తద్విరాసీల్పుణ్యతమం క్షేత్రం త్రైలోక్య విశ్వదం నామ్నా సిద్ధపదం యత్ర సంసిద్ధిముపేయుషీం. తస్యాస్తద్యోగ విద్వదం ఆర్త్యం మస్త్యమహోత్సరి సోదసాం ప్రవరా సౌమ్యం సిద్ధిదా సిద్ధసేవిదాం. కపిలోపి మహాయోగీ భగవాన్ పితురాశ్రమాత్ మాదరం సమనుజ్ఞాప్య ప్రాగుదీశిం దిశం యయోం. సిద్ధచారణ గంధర్వే మునిభిశ్చప్సరో గణై స్తూయమాన సముద్రేణ దత్తార్హణ నికేతనాం. ఆస్తే యోగం సమాస్తాయ సాంఖ్యాచార్యేభిరభిష్టుదా ప్రయాణామభిలోకాన ఉపశాంత్యై సమాహితాం. ఏదం నిగదితం దాయల్పృష్టోహం తవానః కపిలస్య జ సంవాదో దేవహూత్యాశ్చ భావనాం. య ఇదమనుశృణోతి యోభిదత్తే కపిలమునేర్మదమాత్మయోగ గుహ్యం భగవతి కృతి సువర్ణచేద ఉపలభదే భగవల్పదారవిందం. ఇది శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాపురాణే తృతీయస్కందే కపిలయోగాఖ్యానే త్రయస్రింశోధ్యాయాం. సో ది థర్డ్ క్యాంటో ఆఫ్ ఇనిషియస్. నౌ ఆఫ్టర్ దిస్ ది ఫోర్త్ క్యాంటో బిగిన్స్. ఇన్ ద శ్రీమద్భాగవతం వెన్ ద థర్డ్ క్యాంటో ఫినిషెస్ అండ్ ఫోర్త్ క్యాంటో బిగిన్స్ దేర్ ఇస్ దిస్ ఇస్ ది ఎక్స్ప్లెనేషన్ ఆఫ్ వాట్ ఈస్ నోన్ ఎస్ విసర్గం. In the beginning of third canto, it was already explained that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, out of the 12 cantos, Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanamodaya manvandaram ishanukatha nirodho muktirashrayah. So that is how Srimad Bhagavatam is. Bhagavatam begins in the third canto with what is known as sargam. And if third canto is sargam, fourth canto is known as visargam. So that is how that relationship between the third canto and the fourth canto is. That the it begins with sargam. Sargam means the primary creation. In other words, everything what you will find in the third canto is where Krishna's position is recognized by the devotees. And the creation process started by Lord Brahma, which continued through the Prajapatis, and particularly you will find that all the personalities who appeared in the third canto were all Krishna conscious personalities. They were devotees. That is the interesting side of the third canto.
Therefore, third canto is known as Sargam. Sargam means basically primary creation. Now, when you move into the fourth canto, there is an immediate shift from this position. And therefore, fourth canto is known as Visargam. Visargam means that some people have thought that even without Krishna's help, we can manage things. Once this thought comes in, especially for the great personalities, what will happen? The result of that is what is fourth canto. So the difference between third canto and fourth canto is that in the third canto, Krishna is present in everybody, every story. What you see there, Kardama Prajapati story, Devahuti Devi, Vidura, Uddhava, every single personality in that third canto are devotees. Or in other words, they have accepted the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Whereas when it comes to fourth canto, you will find that there are people who do not actually do not want that authority of Krishna or Krishna's rule in their management. And because of that, they have decided to give up Krishna and wanted to act independently of Krishna. And the result you can see in all the stories that comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So basically, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what you will find is that every canto is related to each other. That means from Sargam the third canto begins. And in the fourth canto, when Visargam happens, Visargam is this process where the devotees, people who have acted against Krishna's interest, or in other words, Krishna's instructions, and with the result, they had to pay a heavy price for it. And that is what the story of fourth canto. And those people who acted against the Krishna's instruction, who wanted to be independent, and it is their instructions who have flouted or who have actually objected to Krishna's authority. To keep such people in a place, fifth canto was written. And that is fifth canto. Fifth canto, if you look into the fifth canto, you will see that everything in fifth canto is referring to the hellish planets. And who does go to these hellish planets? Those who have not accepted Krishna's authority. And it is them to keep such people who have rejected Krishna and who have acted independently, it is to keep them in a special position. A special facility has been provided, and that facility is fifth canto. So that is why in the fifth canto you see all the hellish planets are explained. But when you move on to the sixth canto, you will notice something different again. That even if one has committed so many sinful activities and completely rejected Krishna and acted and be so sinful in their life, even to such a person, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead sometimes shows His mercy. To illustrate that point, the sixth canto was written with the story of Ajamila. So you can see that from one canto to another, how that continuity happens. That from fifth canto, those personalities who have even rejected Krishna and who have taken to sense gratification as their prime goal of life, for such personalities, even sometimes some of them, due to the Krishna's mercy, they can also come out of that hellish situation. So therefore, when Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, when he wrote the sixth canto, Vedavyasa Maharshi could not control his emotions, thinking about Krishna's merciful nature, how merciful Krishna was, how much mercy he has shown to Ajamila, a personality who has, although born in a very good circumstances and had the good fortune of getting the best education in spiritual life, in spite of that, Ajamila acted against and acted so sinfully, with the result that at the end Krishna saved him even from that hellish condition. Ajamila's story, once you read Srimad Bhagavatam, it was so touching that Vedavyasa Maharshi himself could not believe that Krishna can show such a merciful nature Krishna has, or magnanimity in him. So therefore, the sixth canto is the story of that great devotee, Ajamila, who simply by that consciousness, what he had, that Ajamilo nama mahisurapura charanpado, that who has completely deviated from the Vedic way of life. Or in other words, Ajamilo nama mahisurapura, that great personality, great Brahmana, Ajamila, charanpado dharma bada grihashramim, he has completely moved away from the path of religious principles. Today if we say somebody is not following religious principles, we just take it for granted. It was okay. There's nothing wrong. That is his personal life. We will say and leave it like that. But that is not the Vedic system. When in the Vedic tradition was strong at that time, people who have left the Vedic culture or who deviated from the Vedic injunctions, they were looked down by the society that was so conscious they were of the values of spiritual life and spiritual principles. But today, because we have no understanding of these things, practically the whole human society has left that culture. And therefore we say, Ajamilo nama mahi surapura charan vibho dharmavada grihashrami. That grihashrami, he entered householder life. And Ajamila's householder life, if you read, you will not find much difference between our householder life and Ajamila's householder life. That's the most interesting thing. So this Ajamila, even to that Ajamila, Krishna has shown his great mercy. And therefore Ajamila got released from this material life, and even though he spent all his lifetime in sinful way, at the last minute Krishna has given him that good mind to call Krishna's name, and that was the good fortune of Ajamila. So this great fortune, everyone may not get it. And therefore, Ajamila was 88 years old when he left his body. So somehow or the other, although his 60 to 70 years of his life, as soon as the householder life started, Ajamila started his sinful life also. And in that long period of sinful life, Ajamila had no time to think about Krishna. And this Ajamila, at the last minute, due to Krishna's mercy, he went back to the spiritual world. That is the sixth canto tells us. So, instead of keeping the life to become 88 years old and then start spiritual life, it is not the best thing to do. That is why the seventh canto is telling us through Prahlad's story. Prahlad Maharaj says that don't wait like Ajamila till you are 88. And at the age of 88, if you want to start your spiritual life, it may not happen. Because who knows that what will be the state of mind at that time? And who knows what will be our consciousness and our health condition, or our senses or mind, whether we will be in any position to start spiritual life at the age of 88. So instead of keeping spiritual life to the old age, one should start in the very early days itself in one's life. And that is why Prahlad Maharaj's story is teaching us in the seventh canto. Prahlada's instructions to all his friends or the school friends who studied with him. If you read Prahlad's instructions, he begins with this. Kaumara acharel prajnaha dharmam bhagavadaniha durlabham manusham janmam tadapyam dhruvamarthadam. That kaumara acharel prajnaha, that one should begin when one is a kumara or in the boyhood itself, not to leave it to the old age like Ajamila. Dharmam bhagavadaniha, bhagavata dharmam should be begun at the beginning, at the early days in life itself, not to keep it so late for the last days in life. Durlabham manusham janmam, human life is very, very rare thing. Tadapyadruvamarthadam, and if there is something to be achieved in the human life, that is self-realization or going back to the spiritual world. So Prahlad Maharaj gave this example, and through his instructions he taught us that one should not wait like Ajamila till the age of 88 comes to start the spiritual life. And following these instructions of Prahlad Maharaj, those Manus who have followed these instructions and practiced that in their life, it is their story in the 8th canto, which is known as Manvantara Adhipati. So different Manus who practiced these instructions of Prahlad Maharaj in their practical life, and they showed to the world that this is how things should be managed in the world, and it is their story. Therefore, the 8th canto is full of stories of those personalities who practice the Krishna consciousness as Prahlad Maharaj has shown by his example. And because they followed the Vedic injunctions very strictly, these Manus were very, very fortunate. That you can see in the 9th canto. How? Because the two dynasties, Solar dynasty and the Lunar dynasty, or known as the Suryavamsham and the Chandravamsham, these two dynasties, because they followed instructions of Prahlad Maharaj strictly, what was the result? In both these dynasties, Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared. This was their good fortune. That Suryavamsham got Lord Ramachandra as their member of the family, whereas this Lunar dynasty, the Chandravamsham, got to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as a member of their family. So you can see
that this continuation of Srimad Bhagavatam from beginning to end is the story of this universe, or the story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different incarnations. And when the ninth canto you will see culminating in the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramachandra in the solar dynasty and Krishna in the lunar dynasty. So if by presenting Krishna himself came down in these two forms, in these two dynasties, the result of that was people were able to understand the glories of the Supreme Lord and they were able to practice Krishna consciousness. And what is actually happening is that because it is so difficult to control the things, what is the most difficult thing to control in this world? The most difficult thing to control in this world is one's own mind. Durjayana Mahamana, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that this mind is the most difficult thing to control. So to control that mind, Vedavyasa Maharshi, through the 10th canto, through the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he gave us the medicine for that. What is it called? The 10th canto is known in the Shastra as Nirodham. Nirodham means obstructing something. Obstructing means or in controlling, bringing something into control. How do you do that? Control of what? Control of the mind. So if one who wants to control the mind, he should go through the 10th canto. 10th canto is the answer to that. Therefore Krishna is instructed always through 90 chapters in the 10th canto. The Supreme Personality of Godhead performed his pastimes for the devotee to control his mind. And through that, what happens at the end, the result of that is one gets qualified to get released from this material life. And therefore, because he gets qualified, one's mind has come under control and freed oneself from the three modes of nature, he becomes qualified to get released from the clutches of material life. And that is why the 11th canto or the Ekadasha Skandam was compiled. So Ekadasha Skandam represents liberation. Liberation from what? Liberation from the clutches of Maya. When one is completely freed from Maya or from the three modes of nature, the 11th canto explains that process or mukti. And is there anything after mukti or after liberation? If the question is asked, Srimad Bhagavatam says there is something even beyond mukti or beyond liberation. To prove that, the Krishna's incarnation as Balamukundan, as the little baby who lies in the and the Markandeya story in the 12th canto will show that even after liberation, one should take to the shelter of Krishna. And that is what is the 12th canto is teaching us, known as Ashrayam. So like this, Atra Sargo Visargascha Stanam Poshanam Utaya Manvandaram Ishanukatha Nirodho Muktirashrayaha. So these 10 symptoms are present in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sargam is the 3rd canto, Visargam is the 4th canto. Stanam means a place for those who have deviated or who have rejected Krishna, and that is their position is the 5th canto. Poshanam means to show Krishna's unlimited mercy, how much it can come to a devotee, to a person in certain instances, to show that Poshanam is written, or Poshanam is that particular aspect of Puranam which is present in the 6th canto. And if you move on to the 7th canto, you will notice there the Poshanam Udaya. Udi means karma vasana. Karma vasana means that due to our own activities, we develop certain vasanas in us or certain propensities. And these propensities in course of time mature itself and start working on in our consciousness. And then the result is that we have to accept more and more material bodies. So Prahlada's story through the 7th canto is teaching us this story, what is known as Udi in the Shastra. Stanam Poshanam Udaya. Then in the 8th canto is story of Manus or Manyandara Katha. Manyandara Anukathayam. Then Stanam Poshanam Udaya Manyandaram Ishanukatha. The Ishanukatha means the story of the Supreme Lord as Lord Ramachandra and Krishna. These two appearances, their background is mentioned in the 9th canto. Nirodho Muktirashraya. Nirodham is that process in the 10th canto. And mukti or liberation is what is described in the 11th canto. And eventually, beyond all than that, in the 12th canto, what is known as ashrayam or shelter is explained. So like this, Srimad Bhagavatam, every canto is related to each other. And through these candles, Vedavyasa Maharshi presents one important message to the society, that to the human population, that if you take to the shelter of Krishna, you will eventually get to that position of release from this material life. And that is the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam. That Bhagavatam talks about this very specifically, that there is not much mention in the Srimad Bhagavatam for material benefit. Everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam relates to the absolute world or to the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. So in the fourth canto when it begins, in the beginning we have seen in the third canto that Swayambhu Manu had three daughters and two sons. Akudi, Devahudi and Prasudi, they were the three daughters. And Priyavrata and Uthanavada were the two boys, two sons who were born for Swayambhu Manu and Shadaruba, the first Manu or the first personality human in the human species, Swayambhu Manu. So out of these three daughters and the two boys, Akudi was married to Ruchi Prajapati. Prajapatis were married to these different children of the five, the three daughters were married to three Prajapatis. Prajapatis means they are known as the progenitors. Or in other words, they have the ability to create and the ability to destroy as well. So this particular capability has come to them by Lord Brahma's mercy. Brahma need their assistance in the process of creation. And that is the responsibility of Prajapatis. So out of these three Prajapatis, Kartava Prajapati married Devahudi Devi. Ruchi Prajapati married Akudi. And the last one, Prasudi, was married by Daksha Prajapati. So the three Prajapatis married three daughters. And out of the three daughters, we find in the first chapter itself, there is an explanation of the children who were born from them. Earlier, we have seen in the third canto, from Kardama Prajapati and Devahudi Devi, there were so many, 9 girls were born, and the 10th was born Lord Kapila. So these 9 girls were married to 9 different sages. Mariji, Atri, Angiras, Pulasthi, Pulahakradu, Bragu, Vasishta, Narada, all these different sages married the 9 daughters of Kartava Prajapati. And their descendants who are born from Kartava Prajapati's daughters, that is mentioned in the first chapter. So it is nothing but actually a history of the family of Swayambhu Manu's daughters. Ruchi Prajapati married, and in that relationship with Ruchi Prajapati and Akudi, we see that Dakshina was born, and then from Murti, their daughter, Naranarayana incarnation happened. Narayana appeared from that relationship. But then we have got the last person, which is the Prasudi. So Prasudi, Brahma spoke to Swayambhu Manu, and they together decided that Prasudi should be married to Daksha Prajapati. And this decision between Brahma and Swayambhu Manu created a lot of problems later, and that is where the story begins. In the fourth canto, you will see that there are 4 different categories of people in this world generally. Women, children, women, young people and old people. These are the 4 categories of human population in this world. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, to present to each one of these different groups of people, he presented 4 stories also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how the fourth canto is. To give the example that things can go wrong at any stage, whether you are a child or a woman or a young man or an old person. In all these 4 states of life, things can still go wrong. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam has been written in that specific format, that in the fourth canto, addressing these 4 kinds of people, 4 different stories were given. That you will notice that, because in the first, if you take it to give instructions to women, the first story of Daksha was given, or the story of Sati Devi, who later came as Sri Parvati, Lord Shiva's consort. Her story was presented for the sake of instructing the women. And then in the next one, the 6 chapters are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam referring to the story of Daksha and Sati Devi and Lord Shiva. That story of Dakshayagam or Daksha's sacrifice, everything is in that 6 chapters. Then after that, another 6 chapters
Vedavyas Maharshi presented the story of Maharaj Dhruva, Dhruva Maharaj's story as a little boy, how he executed spiritual life and what reaction, what came out of that. These stories, he has given example through Dhruva Maharaj's story. So, 6 chapters for Daksha, 6 chapters for Dhruva. First chapter was for the story of the descendants of Manu, Swayambhu Manu's descendants. 6 chapters for Daksha and 6 chapters for Dhruva. Then, after that, comes a personality known as Vena. This Vena's activities in the Srimad Bhagavatam is very, very disturbing. And if you hear the story of Srimad Bhagavatam through Vena, you will even start wondering, where is this Vena? Is this within us or is it somebody outside? Even to such an extent, it is explained in the Bhagavatam, the story of Vena. And then the story of Maharaj Prithu. So, Maharaj Prithu's story is explaining this particular incident in reference to young people, where things can go wrong in a young man's life. All that is explained in that Vena and Prithu Maharaj story. And to refer to the old people, to those who have spent their whole lifetime in looking after the family and looking after the their own personal interest in this world. Prajinabhar, his story is mentioned in the last 5 chapters and the story of Puranjanam. So from this you can see the 4th canto is set up in such a way that everyone in the society is benefited, both the women, children, the young people as well as the old people. And that is how Srimad Bhagavatam goes into the 4th canto. Now in the 4th canto, when the story of Daksha was begun, the Daksha story is like this, that Daksha, he was a Prajapati. Prajapati means who had this capacity to create by their mind. They had the ability to create, Prajapatis. And this Prajapati, Daksha was one of the Prajapati. There were so many Prajapatis mentioned, but Daksha was one of the Prajapatis. This Daksha, by nature, was a little different than the others. Due to the influence of the lower modes of nature, from the very beginning, Daksha has shown certain proclivities or a certain attitude in life that too much of Rajogunam was controlling him all the time. And that you will hear when you go through the Daksha story again, you will find this nature manifesting all the time. So Daksha by nature itself was so much involved in he has that nature in him to control others or to be to be worshipped by others. This desire, this comes from Rajogunam. Rajogunam means out of the 3 modes of material nature, Sattugunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam, all 3 has its own symptoms. Tamogunam is, or the mood of ignorance, is the symptom of that is sleepy nature and also lazy. And this sleepishness or the sleepy nature and the laziness is Tamogunam. Rajogunam means Pravarti and Abhimanam, or in other words, always wanted to work, and the result is to feel proud about it, that I've done this, I've done that, I'll go do this, I'll do that, I'll manage this, I'll manage that. So many things, me, everything behind it. I am the person who is doing everything in this world. Without me, what will happen? The family will go to hell, the country will go to hell. All these kind of false conceptions work very, very, very strongly in the heads of a person who is influenced by the Rajogunam. So that Rajogunam nature is very, very difficult to overcome. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kamayesha Krodhayesha Rajoguna Samalbhava. Then this Kamam and Krodham, lust and anger, is coming from Rajogunam. And that is the origin of that. And Krishna says, Kamayesha Krodhayesha Rajoguna Samalbhava. That it is very difficult to overcome these 2 things. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, towards the end, you will notice there, that these 2 things, Kamam and Krodham, and that means the lust and anger, that goes side by side. They are considered to be 2 brothers. That once in the Bhagavatam, you will notice somewhere, I don't know where it is, it's mentioned, while talking about, I think it is in the 3rd canto, Maitreya Rishi, it says there, that Vidura was talking about Maitreya, I think in that situation, that he did not say that Maitreya Rishi got upset with Duryodhana. On the other hand, he put it like this. He said, the Kama's younger brother attacked him. That's the way it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, anger developed in Maitreya Maharshi's mind, seeing Duryodhana's attitude towards the Pandavas.
So like this, kamam and krodham, lust and anger, go side by side. One is followed by the other. So to those personalities who are infected by rajogunam or the mode of passion, you will find that this Daksha was one of that personality who had the terrible problem with this. The result was that those who are so much infected in the mode of goodness, mode of passion or rajogunam, they will be very much attracted to that part of Vedic literature known as Karmakandam. Karmakandam is attractive to them. Why? Because Karmakandam means performing karma all the time and enjoying the result from that. Actually, Karmakanda has been created for the sake of releasing oneself from this propensity to work. Why this propensity to work has come so strongly in us? Because it is, we have to accept this material body because of our own karmic activities, what we have performed in previous lives and even in this life. It is this karma that binds this whole world together. Every activity in this material world is because of the strong desire for performing work or strong desire for activities. But from the spiritual point of view, all the jnanis and the great yogis will certify that karma creates ignorance. This is the problem. That on the one hand, when one is too absorbed when working in this material world, engaging in different kinds of activities, thinking that by my activity I can improve the conditions, unfortunately that person is not aware that he is only getting more and more caught up in this material life or in the material world. This is why all the Shastra says and points out to only one thing, that too much entanglement, or actually pure karma itself, is nothing but ajnanam. Ajnanam means ignorance. It generates more and more ignorance in the person. The more one is entangled, you can also see that in the material world, when one is more entangled in this material activities, it is difficult to turn their mind towards Krishna. It is impossible. Although externally they may show so many things, mind is constantly engaged in the mode of passion, and this rajogunam will influence that person to such a high degree that automatically he will try to engage in more and more activities. The result of that is that it will generate more ignorance in that person. It will be very difficult for him to understand that what is spiritual life, what is the freedom, what is freedom from material existence. These things will be difficult for such a person to understand. So in the Bhagavatam, this karma nature is discussed. And Bhagavatam talks about it very strongly, that how to free oneself from karma, that is the whole goal from that. On the one hand, it is like this, that karma generates ignorance. But on the other hand, we are unable to refrain from karma. Why? Because the very fact we came to this material world was to perform karma. It is the past activities that has given us this material body. And this material body means that one has to execute karma in this world. One is forced to accept. One is forced to execute karma in this world. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly that nobody can refrain from work, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is forced to act one way or the other under the three modes of material nature. Devi Kesha Gunamai Mama Maya Durateya Mame Vayam Prabhadyande Maya Medam Tarandide. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says like that. So this is our difficult situation. On the one hand, karma creates ignorance and karma entangles us more. On the other hand, we are forced to or compelled to act in a particular way in this material world. So caught up between these two, the living entity is thinking that he is trying to make himself happy. And you can imagine, knowing this very well, when Vedas were compiled by the Supreme Lord, he kept Karmakanda in that for this reason. Because Karmakanda actually helps a person that, okay, if one cannot refrain from karma, he should perform such karma which will help him to give up this attachment to karma. This is what's required. And it is for this reason that Karmakanda has come into the Vedic way of life. Otherwise, Jnanakandam and Upasanakandam is the main topics of discussion in the Vedas. But you will find most of the Vedas refers to the Karmakandam. Why? Because human society by nature is inclined towards work. So the intention was that at least if you have to work or act in this way, act in such a way that the conception is right, that so little by little let one get released from this attachment to work. So karmakanda, how does karmakanda help? Karmakanda help in this direction. Because if one performs the sacrifices, as it is mentioned in the Vedic literature, by the proper execution of them, in due course, that person will develop detachment for the result of those activities. Because every karma in the material world, one desires to have the results of that activity. One cannot work without that. It is the desire. Material desires builds up inside. It manifests in the form of karma. This is what it is. So every karma is performed in this world with the desire to have the result. So Krishna is saying there that if you have to perform that activity, perform through sacrifices. And if you perform sacrifices, the result is that the result is offered to the demigods and the Supreme Lord. One will eventually get released from that desire for execution of work or execution of sacrifices, and eventually he will come to Jnanakandam or the process of knowledge or to bhakti process or the process of devotional service. So this is the two possibilities for him to move from karmakanda to jnanam or to upasana. So this will happen. This is how Vedic literature have formulated the system. Now in this karmakanda, Vedai sarvani karmani abhalavaradaya varnidani iti buddhvatani tvayarpidani tavahi samanujaranyani naishkarmyamishe. Then how should one perform the sacrifices? Naishkarmyamishe. Naishkarmya means no attachment to the result from that sacrifices. That is how it should be performed. But generally what happens is that great personalities who got entangled with this karmakandam, in course of time they got caught up in that and they have not able to come out of it. This is the difficulty with karmakandam. And our Daksha Prajapati was one among them. He got involved in karmakandam, and from karmakandam he could not escape from that. In fact, you have to think a little bit more in these things, because at least if one execute karmakandam, there is some hope. Because after all, karmakanda comes from the Vedic literature. In the Vedic injunctions, karmakanda follows. But our activities neither not even follows the karmakanda. Our activities are such in this world that it is nothing but creates more and more hell for ourselves in many lifetimes to come. This is, in other words, our karma in the Shastra is known as Prakritam. Prakritam means which is very, very crude and coarse, not fine. So that crude kind of activities, what we do in this world, cannot help us to free ourselves from this material way of life. It's not possible. Because these activities are created in such a way, and because there is no knowledge, that mostly it is an education in the modern world today. The more one works like an ass till he breaks his bones, that is considered to be an advancement. But from the Vedic point of view, if one is doing that, except that he is an ass, Vedas don't give a damn for them. Because it says there that such a person who has addicted to that kind of work, kamayesha kamamashritya dushpuryam dambhamanamadanvidaha. In the three modes of material nature, Krishna says, what is pushing him to do that is dambham and abhimanam. That means pride and the ego. That is pushing him to do all these hellish activities in this world. So the result of that is, Krishna says he should pay for it. He cannot just walk away from that. He does so many things in ignorance without knowing anything. And tomorrow you can't expect him to be released from material conditioned life. So he should stay here and continue his activities as long as he wants, until he comes to the point that he gets fed up with it. And then one day mind will turn looking for something different. So it is that is the nature of this karmakandam. Daksha Prajapati was not an exception. This Daksha Prajapati felt karmakandam as the final, the epitome of Vedic way of life. And when he got involved in that, what was the result? Karmakandam brings only one thing, Rajogunam. Rajogunam comes from karmakandam. And this Rajogunam means pride and also work. The continuously performing sacrifices, one after the other, and offering to the demigods and enjoying the results as well. So somehow or the other, during the process of creation, Brahma found Daksha Prajapati as a leadership qualities in him and gave a special position for
as the head of all the Prajapatis to Daksha. Daksha got this special position as the head of all Prajapatis. What does that mean? Head of Prajapatis means, in all the sacrifices, in all the sacrifices which were performed in the higher planetary systems, Daksha was given a special position along with the Trimurtis, that means Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. Along with them, a position was offered to Daksha also. For example, in the many, many big sacrifices mentioned in the Vedic literature, you will find there that these three personalities, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, they are present there, and along with them, a position was offered to Daksha Prajapati also. So Daksha took up that position. And what happened was, as soon as he got that position, the immediate thing was, he wanted to show his position to others, that I am in charge. Just like sometimes some people show that who is in charge, you should know I am in charge. So he wanted to make sure to everybody knows that he is in charge of the sacrifices. As soon as he got a position along with the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, Daksha Prajapati also started receiving his offerings in the sacrifices from the sages. So sages were performing different sacrifices, and the result was that they had to offer to Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. An offering was made to Daksha also. So in course of time, this Daksha's nature became so proud that the sages were finding it very, very hard to accept him in that way, because he was expected to be acting like more sanely than a person like in the mode of passion, in the Rajogunam. So instead of being detached, Daksha Prajapati acted completely in the mode of passion, and the proud and everything, pride was building up inside. And what does that mean? Pride is followed by the destruction automatically. So this pride built up to such a degree that all the sages went to Lord Brahma and complained about it. They told the Lord Brahma that it has become really difficult. You have to do something to correct Daksha and bring him back to the proper understanding. So such people who are too attached to karma and who are engaged in karmic activities are known as karmata. Karmata means one who has too much involved in the Karmakanda section. They are known as Karmatas. So this Karmata brings this nature, Abhimanam and Pravarti, that means pride or ego, and also activity. They will continue. And this Daksha, unfortunately, had a group of people with him, who also, in course of time, picked up the same quality as the leader. And their head was Bhrigu Maharshi, the sage Bhrigu. So Bhrigu, and there were another group of people who followed Bhrigu and who all followed together Daksha. And wherever they went, they all grew together. They'll perform sacrifices. And this was their nature. So this became a habit with them. So in these situations, once it so happened that when the pride develops, the next thing what will happen is he will start questioning even the authority of the Supreme Lord. That's what happens. So, at one stage, when the sages complained to Brahma about this, Brahma thought about that for a long time, how to change the situation, because you are given a good position to somebody, and it is suddenly very difficult to sack him from there. It was so difficult for him. So Brahma thought that after all, Daksha Prajapati is the head of the Prajapatis, I should call him to Brahmaloka and have a word with him. So it was in this mood that Daksha Prajapati was invited to Brahmaloka by Lord Brahma. Daksha Prajapati somehow or the other went there, because after all Brahma is his father. So all the Prajapatis were born from Brahma. So Daksha Prajapati also had to oblige. After all, the father is calling him to come. But his pride was too much. At the same time, he was also his spiritual master. From Prajapatis got instructions in spiritual matters from Brahma. So they have obligation to listen to Brahma, both wise as father and as well as their spiritual master. So in either way, Daksha Prajapati felt obliged to go, and he went to see Lord Brahma. So at that time, Lord Brahma's mind was going through this, that one of the things Daksha has developed during his lifetime was that somehow or the other he developed a certain uneasiness with Lord Shiva. This has happened to him. How it happened was that he somehow or other didn't like him, his nature, and also his activities. And a certain degree, this can happen to devotees also. We'll become devotees of Krishna, and then you will start condemning everybody else. This is not what Srimad Bhagavatam says.
Bhagavatam doesn't say that you have to condemn all devotees of Lord Shiva and abuse Lord Shiva because he is not in our parampara or he is not in our tradition. That because you do not know what is the position of Lord Shiva, we talk all sorts of things. Sometimes this can happen. And this has happened also to Daksha. Daksha developed, I am performing sacrifices. Whom these sacrifices are meant for? Yet, you know, in the Vedas it says, all sacrifices are meant to please Vishnu. So in other words, I am a Vaishnava, I am serving Vishnu. Why should I care for Lord Shiva? This mentality developed in his mind. The result was that he started speaking openly against Lord Shiva. And not knowing what is Lord Shiva's position is, what his potencies are, who he is, not even knowing that, this mistake happened to Dashaprajapati. So when Dashaprajapati came to see Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma thought at that time that perhaps I can bring Daksha into a better situation if I ask Lord Daksha to marry one of his daughters to Lord Shiva. This is how normally people do in this material world also. You will notice big relationships are built up between families. If they find that it is beneficial to both of them materially, they will make such engagements or arrangements so that both of them feel powerful and benefited from that. So Brahma thought that he invited Dashaprajapati, inquired from him about the welfare of his family. This is what Brahma did first thing. So when he inquired about the welfare of the family, Dashaprajapati said, first thing he asked was about the family. So Dashaprajapati said, yes, I am married and now life is quite good. Then I've got 16 daughters. This is what Dashaprajapati had. 16 daughters he had and had no sons. Brahma said, don't worry about it. After all, through the daughters only the family tree grows further and further. So he consoled like this and asked him, well, what is the plan now? What are we going to do about the daughters? Dashaprajapati said, no, I have not thought about it very much. They are just approaching the marriageable age. And I plan to get them married as soon as possible. And this, that and the other, they had a lot of discussions between Brahma and Dashaprajapati. And at the end of that, Dashaprajapati Brahma just in a nice way mentioned to him that get married all the daughters, but at least one daughter, you should marry her to Kailas, to Mount Kailas, where Lord Shiva, means married to Kailas means to marry to Lord Shiva. He mentioned like that to Dashaprajapati. Somehow or the other, when Lord Shiva's name was mentioned, Daksha did not like it very much. He just thought that what am I supposed to do out of the 16 daughters? Now, if I have to marry one daughter, it means that I have to build a relationship with Lord Shiva, which I do not want. But at the same time, how to say no to the father? And Brahma has taken a special effort to invite him and to talk about it. Immediately he didn't reply anything. Daksha didn't mention one word at that time. Let me think about it, he said. And in a very, very unhappy mood, he left to Brahmaloka and came back to his abode. So when Daksha came back, he thought about it. He thought, should I upset Brahma by not listening to him? That means it could cause a lot of problems. First of all, he was worried about his own position. That's what he was thinking, that what will happen if Brahma take me out of this Prajapati's position and offer it to somebody else. So he didn't want to upset Brahma straight away. But on the other hand, out of the 16 daughters, he thought, if one daughter goes, let it go. What does it matter? Other 15 are there. These all ideas were working in his head. And immediately he decided that 13 of his daughters he married in one lot to Dharma. Dharmadeva was married to 13 daughters. All that, their names are mentioned in the first chapter and in the second chapter also. And from those 13 daughters who were married to Dharmadeva, so many nice children were born from them. One girl was married to Agni, fire god. Agni was offered one girl. One girl was married to Aryama. Aryama is the head of the Pitraloka. Pitraloka planet is occupied by the inhabitants of Pitraloka. Their head is Aryama. You will see in the Mahabharata also reference to Aryama's relationship with Satyavati Devi, Vyasadeva's mother, how she was somebody who has come from Pitraloka, who had to accept a birth in this world. And that is how Satyavati Devi came to this world. So all these things are there. So Pitraloka, from Pitraloka came Satyavati Devi.
Similarly, this head of Pitaloka is Aryama. So one daughter was married to Aryama. So one daughter Aryama, one daughter to Agni, fire god, and 13 of them were married to Dharmadeva. And then the last one, who was known as Sadidevi, Daksha decided to marry her to Kailas, to Lord Shiva. So the marriage was performed, still with a lot of suspicion in the mind of Daksha. He continued that relationship. It didn't last very long. That relationship didn't go very well. In other words, as soon as the marriage was over, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva, who is unaffected by the three modes of nature, he understood Daksha's mind very well. He read through his mind very clearly. He is also the super soul. He can see and know what's going on through Daksha's mind. So, but Sadidevi was serving Lord Shiva nicely, and without any problem, Lord Shiva went to Kailas with Sadidevi, and nothing happened. After marriage, nothing was happened. For a long time, the intention was that by building this relationship, Daksha will come into contact with Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva has a special position in the spiritual world because he is considered to be the Jnanamargam, or the process of knowledge comes through him. That Jnanam, all the great personalities who follow the process of knowledge, they worship Lord Shiva. Because he is such a great personality, that his realizations in the process of knowledge is so high, and his austerities and penances are so high, that there is no one in all the creation who can actually say that he is above Lord Shiva in any of these things. Therefore, all the great sages like Vasishtha, Vishwamitra, Atri, and so many other great personalities, they go to Lord Shiva and listen to him to receive transcendental knowledge. This is his position. And constantly he instructs them. In the fifth canto you will see in his abode how Lord Shiva instructs the great sages. That's explained there. So this personality, Lord Shiva, if somehow or the other Daksha comes into contact with him, Brahma thought, in course of time, due to association, some influence has to be there from Lord Shiva on Daksha, and that ignorance will go away and he will become a little bit more knowledgeable and thoughtful in his life. This was Brahma's intention. And this was the reason why Brahma wanted to marry this one daughter at least to Kailas, to Lord Shiva. So to benefit Daksha, that was the intention behind it. But after the marriage, somehow or the other, due to Daksha's ignorance and due to Daksha's nature, this relationship didn't develop very well. That in a few months time, Daksha did not want to see them, want to know anything about them. A sort of indifferent nature developed in Daksha. And seeing that, Lord Shiva also kept aloof from him. After all, it takes time to purify somebody. And that is what was going through Lord Shiva's mind. And Shiva immediately kept away from that, and many years passed like that, and there was no interaction between the two families. Shiva lived in Kailas with Sadidevi, and Daksha continued with his sacrifices, and he felt that, oh, I have done my obligation to Brahma by marrying her, I don't want to know anything about them, and left them like that. And but Daksha continued his lifestyle in that. But unfortunately, after some time, an incident happened. And this incident, what happened was the most unfortunate thing to happen, because that was the beginning of Daksha's life, the end of Daksha's life. Daksha, one sacrifice was performed by all the Vishwasrishti Karta, that means Agni, Vayu, Varuna, all these are personalities involved in the maintenance of this world. They all together decided to perform a sacrifice. And in that sacrifice, Daksha was also invited. So being the head of the Prajapatis, he was offered a seat there along with Brahma and Shiva. A special position was offered to him as well, because he is the head of the Prajapatis. So unfortunately, Daksha didn't turn up along with everybody else. He came a little bit late. That you will see also. Sometimes great people, when they go for meetings, they will go at the last minute. They won't walk in straight away in the first beginning itself, because it's a little bit for them to assert their position, authority. They do like that. They will come at the last minute when everyone else is present, they'll just walk in. So this was the nature. So Daksha did the same thing in that sacrifice. Brahma was there, Lord Shiva was there, everybody was present there.
And so many great sages were present in that meeting. And it is to that meeting that Daksha walked in along with his associates like Bhrigu and so many others. And what did they carry with them? They carried with them Kushagras, Chamata, and the wooden plate which they used for the sacrifices. All the instruments, normally there are so many instruments mentioned in the Vedic literature as the instruments used for the sacrifice. You must not confuse that these are not the sacrifices what we perform here or in the temples. They are not the same type of sacrifices. The fire sacrifices we perform is different than the sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda. Karmakanda sacrifice is so extensive and exhaustive that it requires so many people and so many days of preparation and so many days of determined effort to make it a success. It is so complicated and requires people with great knowledge and great ability to do all that. So even it has become such a rare thing now, even to get people to perform such sacrifices is difficult today. But anyway, Bhrigu and all the associates, Daksha walked into this place where sacrifice was performing. So when Daksha walked in, everybody got up from there because he's the head of the Prajapatis along with everyone else. He has got a position as well. Everybody got up. Lord Brahma didn't get up. After all, he is his father. You are not expected to get up when the son walks in. So Brahma sat in his place. So apparently, Daksha looked everywhere. And apparently he was not looking who all has got up. Rather, he was looking who has not got up. This was his nature. From there you can see the mind of the person. That he was looking there and seeing who hasn't got up now when I come in. This was his mood. So he walks in. Brahma didn't get up. Lord Shiva, who was present there, he also sat there. He didn't get up either. That infuriated Daksha. Daksha was thinking, who is Shiva after all? He is my son-in-law. He has married my daughter. Son-in-law means more or less the position of a son. And in that condition, why does he not get up? This was going through his mind. And the pride that was gone through his head, pride what was built up inside because of his karmakanda activities was such that he could not resist himself. He became uncontrolled. In other words, as soon as he walked in, his mind started burning, seeing this Lord Shiva's nature. And he felt immediately that he should mention this to the people who were present there. Because Daksha started interpreting in his mind that perhaps they all have a role in this. Otherwise, why do they do like this? That when I am, who is equal with the three Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, when I walk in, they all got up, that's nice. But they should have encouraged Shiva also to get up. So, immediately he started talking in a very rude way about Lord Shiva. He saw that Lord Shiva has no qualities, he said. He does not understand his position. And there is a whole lot of abuse he started talking about it in that sacrifice. Brahma was realizing how much degraded Daksha has gone to. And he could not do anything at that point. Daksha spoke very rudely about Lord Shiva. And hearing all that, that supreme spiritual master, Lord Shiva, did not speak one word. That was he, because he is so transcendently situated, he kept quiet about it. Didn't say one word. If he has opened his eyes, it took only 1 second to finish Daksha then and there. It didn't take much time more than that. But because Lord Shiva had different intentions, he kept quiet about it. Didn't say one word. So Daksha continued his abuses. And even Daksha started talking like that, all his associates, Bhrigu, also joined them. And when Shiva was there, Lord Shiva's associate like Nandigeshwar and others were also present there. So originally it was between Lord Shiva and Daksha. But now what has happened is, these arguments got moved into the followers, between Nandigeshwar and Bhrigu. They started arguing about each other. So Bhrigu started saying that Lord Shiva doesn't deserve any worship, nor does he require any respect because he has acted so much, so against the not being respectful to Daksha. This, that and the other. Nandigeshwar asked Bhrigu, do you know who Lord Shiva is? Do you know his position? But Nandigeshwar's words were not listened to. The result was that they all cursed Lord Shiva. They cursed Lord Shiva that he will always associate with people in the mode of ignorance. He will wear such things as ashes and bones, and he will have matted hair all the time. These curses come from Daksha. When Daksha, before he cursed, everyone in the assembly started saying to Daksha, don't do that, because what disaster it's going to bring, we do not know. They were trying to warn Daksha. Daksha did not heed to anybody's words. Took from his kamandalu, from the water pot, took water and started what is known as prakshanam. Prakshanam means you throw the water and speak what you have to say, and that's it. The words will come true. That was their position, was like that. So Dakshapratyapati did this to Lord Shiva. And Bhrigu and Nandikeshwar, they started cursing each other. So when they started cursing each other, Daksha's curses were like this, that Lord Shiva has to go through this. And eventually the sacrifice was over. And Lord Shiva, without saying one word, he left the sacrificial arena, went back to Kailas with Nandikeshwar and all the followers. So when Lord Shiva did not say one thing and went back, the Nandikeshwar and others were very upset, because their master has been offended. They for whom they have given up their life. Nandikeshwar was feeling too much that he wanted to destroy the whole whole sacrifice. So he started immediately. They started, the followers of the Lord Shiva's associates who came with him, they destroyed the scene so badly that Bhrigu, who also had the power of from the fire sacrifice they were performing, he invoked from Dakshinagni. Dakshinagni means from the south side of the fire sacrifice, what is known as Abhijara Devata. Abhijara Devata means those who are capable of destroying your enemies. And that is also, these are all from mantra, they are able to create all these things. They created all these entities from mantra. That Abhijara Devadas were created, who came out and they started beating up all Lord Shiva's associates. So in that battle between them, Lord Shiva's associates lost and they had to leave the scene and come back. They came back crying back to the Kailas again with Lord Shiva, to Lord Shiva. So that incident happened, and this has actually happened, and for Lord Shiva did not take serious notice of it. He thought things in course of time will correct itself. So he left it there. And he has completely even ignored it, everything after that. Only thing was, there is no more relationship between Daksha and Kailas. That relationship was totally broken down. So it is in these circumstances, Daksha's enmity or Shiva Dvesham or this enmity towards Lord Shiva started building up more and more and more inside. Many, many years passed after this, and throughout the universe, people have forgotten all these things. And in that circumstances, one day, Lord Shiva did not care for Daksha and executed his spiritual practices in his abode. That one day, Saridevi was bathing in the Alakananda River. And when she was bathing there, suddenly she saw a lot of demigods and demigods' wives. They were traveling in the sky. This happened after many, many years after this incident. So when they were traveling in the sky, Saridevi saw them, and they also saw Saridevi bathing in the river. They asked Saridevi that, are you not traveling to your father's palace? The big sacrifice is going on there. Saridevi was completely unaware of anything, what was going on in Daksha's palace. Because by now, Daksha has performed what is known as Vajpayam, a sacrifice known as Vajpayam. And after that, he has performed Diksha for another sacrifice known as Brihaspati Savam. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, these things. And Brihaspati Savam, he was performing Diksha, or he was preparing himself for that one after the other sacrifice. That was his happiness. So in that sacrifice, he wanted all the demigods should come personally. Normally, in all the big sacrifices, demigods don't go personally. There is an offering made to them, and they receive that through fire. That is the way, in a subtle way, they receive their offerings. That is the for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through Brahmana's face and the fire, Krishna accepts the offering. That is the Vedic way of offering. So our demigods also, normally, they don't go for all the sacrifices. Sometimes they do. But in this particular instance, Daksha insisted that everyone should come for the sacrifice. So all the demigods were present, were going personally to participate in this big sacrifice. So when they went there, they were seeing Sati Devi here. Naturally, they expected that Sati Devi will be there in the because this is a very, very special sacrifice what Daksha was performing. And they expected Sati Devi to be there in that sacrifice. And when they saw Sati Devi there, they asked Sati Devi whether she intends to go. And Sati Devi was not even aware of that, what was going on in Daksha's palace. So as soon as the demigods and the women from the heavenly planets, and they all went away, Sati Devi felt a little bit upset about it, that such an important thing is happening in one's own father's home, and he has not even cared to invite them, or to talk about letting them know. He invited them. So Sati Devi got very upset, being very much thinking, after all, it was her parents. Sati Devi's parents were there, Daksha and his wife. So this was not even announced to them. And so Sati Devi, after finishing her bath, she went back to Lord Shiva and spoke to him. So Sati Devi said to Lord Shiva that, have you not seen what is going on in my parents' house? Shiva knew everything what was going on. Nothing was unknown to him. So he said to Lord Shiva, I would like to go for that sacrifice. And although Daksha is my father, although they have not invited us to come, still I think there should be no problem. After all, I'm going to my father's house. Can anybody say anything? When you go to your father's house, a daughter is thinking, I'm going to visit my father. How can he say anything to me? He will definitely welcome me. Sati Devi said like this to Daksha, to Lord Shiva. First Lord Shiva kept quiet. But then Sati Devi insisted that Lord Shiva should also go with her for the sacrifice. That is where the problem started. When Sati Devi said to Lord Shiva, he should accompany her, Lord Shiva said, it is right, whatever you have spoken to me so far is right, that there is no necessity to have a special invitation from my parents to go and visit them. That's not required, I agree with that. Secondly, when an auspicious thing like this is happening in my parents' home, it's not necessary that one should automatically go there without, even if anyone is not, when he is uninvited. Secondly, sometimes it can happen that when there is a big ceremony, you may leave out somebody by mistake. Somebody has been left out. I don't mind all that, and I have no problem in going there. And I like to go into the sacrifices because there's going to be an offering for me. I have to receive that as well. And generally I do go myself and present myself in all the sacrifices when my devotees invite me to come. I do that. But he said to Sati Devi, I am not sure how we will be received by Daksha. Lord Shiva's mind was, at that time, was thinking that if I go there, unnecessarily I am inviting offenses by going there. This was going through Lord Shiva's mind. And that personality who at the end of the creation, when the whole planet and the whole universe is burned by the fire coming from the mouth of that personality, Lord Shiva, who takes only 1 second to destroy this whole creation. And from that Lord Shiva, these words came out. And he spoke against Daksha in this way, that suppose if we go there and Daksha do not welcome us, what's our situation then? What will happen to us? It's not harm. Sometimes in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned very specifically, if a guest comes to your house or comes to the house, normally a guest expects that he will be honored. That is how the guests are to be treated. And if the guest comes to the house, he should be respected, received properly, and he should be offered nice foodstuff, and he should feel welcome at home. And this is what is the normal. Bhagavatam says in Rukmini Swayamvaram, the story is mentioned there, how they were receiving Krishna all the time. So similarly, here also, one should go, one should get up from one's seat and go to the person, welcome him and bring him in and welcome him with nice words, that how long we have been waiting for your arrival, and make him feel welcome all the time. and that is a part of the culture in receiving a guest. But if he does not receive us like that, and if he starts saying, "Oh, we didn't expect you to come. Why did you turn up?" If he starts putting these questions to us, that will be very, very, very awkward. And I do not know what will happen at that time. Lord Shiva mentioned to Saridevi, I do not know what's going to happen at that time. So rather than inviting offenses unnecessarily, it looks to me that the best thing for me is not to go. And Lord Shiva very, very categorically mentioned this to Saridevi, I have no intention to go and see Daksha. He put it very clearly to her. Now, if you go there, if you reject my instruction, and if you go there, I do not know what will happen. Maybe things may not turn out very nicely. Shiva, who knew what was going to happen already, has mentioned this to Saridevi. Saridevi's mind started working, sometimes this way, sometimes whether to go, not to go. Both sides, analyzing all the time. Eventually, Saridevi thought, maybe it was a mistake of Lord Shiva. After all what was required was he should have just got up from the seat. Just by not doing that, he has invited unnecessarily this displeasure from my father. So at that time, she was thinking in terms of her father, beloved father. And she said that if Lord Shiva had got up, I know we agree that Lord Shiva is a great personality, but at least he could have got up just to show some respect to him. And if he had done that, all this, because according to Saridevi's calculations, this uneasy relationship began from that day in that sacrifice when Lord Shiva didn't get up. So she thought herself that this is the cause of all this, that Lord Shiva did not show any courtesy to him. Okay, Daksha is like that, but at least Shiva could have acted properly. He didn't do that either. So it's not that everything is wrong on Daksha's side. Something is wrong on my husband's side as well. So like this, she analyzed back and forth. And eventually, she said to herself that maybe I should go. It's not proper for me to sit here. Because inside the desire to see all the relatives, mother, sisters, brothers, everybody there, and all the friends, and going to parents' house, very feeling that pleasure. And Saridevi was thinking like this. At that time, Lord Shiva put a break there. He said to her, I understand the thoughts that is going through your mind. That as far as I am concerned, Shiva was very forthright and very straight on this point. He said, you are thinking that why I did not get up when Daksha came to the scene, to the sacrifice. Particularly, I deliberately did that. Because Daksha has this bodily concept very, very strongly in his head. He is very much in identification with his body. Not only that, when somebody is very, very proud, if you encourage it by fanning it up, by offering such things to that person, such respects to him, his pride will only increase. It's not going to decrease. So the right thing for me to do was not to get up. Because if I had got up at that time, Daksha would have thought in his mind, look, even Shiva is getting up when I come in. This is where he will interpret that. And he will encourage that to everybody. And he will get more proud and more degraded in his position. So deliberately, I sat down and didn't get up. Personally, I have nothing to get from Daksha. I have nothing to get from you either. Or Saridevi or Daksha without that. Because Lord Shiva's position is like that he is self-satisfied. Through his penances, austerities and strength, the strength what Lord Shiva has acquired in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it will say repeatedly, Vedavyas is mentioning this again and again. Is there any other glorious personality than Lord Shiva who in performing austerities and penances? Through tapasya and through penances and through this transcendental knowledge he had and his determination, there is no one who is equal to Lord Shiva. Knowing all this very well, Saridevi immediately changed their mind. He decided that maybe I should not push Lord Shiva too far. Perhaps it's not good. After all, he has his own. Who is he? Lord Shiva's name is mentioned there. And he decided to leave Lord Shiva and still, due to attachment, decided to go.
So, Satidevi went there. Satidevi went into the sacrifice. And when Satidevi left, along with her, Lord Shiva's associates also started. Actually, Lord Shiva's consort is traveling, so naturally she should be looked after, and all the associates like Nandi and others also started going along with her. So when they were going, Lord Shiva was transcendently situated in his abode, and they went there. When they went to see when they went to the sacrifice, as soon as they came into the sacrifice, they were already late. Sacrifices began, but unfortunately, what Lord Shiva mentioned has all happened. Then, as soon as they walked in, Daksha saw them coming in to the sacrifice and scene. And Daksha didn't even show any tinge of recognition that her daughter has come. And Satidevi's heart was burning for this indifference and for this attitude of Daksha. And when all this happened, Satidevi is followed with all the other associates of Shiva. They walked in and they went everywhere. And she noticed that nobody was, because Daksha was not showing any recognition, all the members who were present there, they were also acting in the same way. They did not show any recognition either. So at least she thought she will go to her mother. After all, mother is mother, wherever it is. And mother and sisters were sitting one place. So she went up to them. And when she went up to them, they immediately received her and took her to her a separate room and received her nicely there and started inquiring about the welfare and all that. Just normally how life is in that. Satidevi did not answer one word to any one of them, because in her heart she was seeing that Daksha was become very, very inimical to her, and not only that, to Lord Shiva as well. So seeing all these things, Satidevi felt very, very, very upset. In that situation, she thought that if this is Daksha's attitude towards me and towards my husband, what's the point in me coming here? Now the mind has started going back in another way. So all this time she has fought very strongly against her own mind to come here. And Lord Shiva has instructed her not to go there. In spite of all that, she had come here. And the result was that Daksha has shown a complete rejection or complete indifference to her. So she decided at that time, let me check what is going on in this sacrifice. It is then that Satidevi went into the sacrifice scene and looked around what is offered and to whom it is offered. She started checking. So she noticed one thing, that all the demigods, they all had their seats and their part, Havir Bhagam it's called, the portion of the Havis that is being offered to them in the sacrifice through the mantra, were offered to every single demigod who were present there. And she looked for a place where Lord Shiva's presence seat is provided. There was no place for Lord Shiva. Which is known as in the Bhagavatam and in the Shastra, it is mentioned as Rudra Bhagam. Rudra Bhagam means the part of the sacrifice meant to be offered to Lord Shiva. And that wasn't there. Because this Daksha, out of his pride and arrogance, he has instructed the Brahmanas who are performing the sacrifices and the stages that there is no need to offer anything to Lord Shiva. The pride has gone to such a degree that he has done like this. When Satidevi saw this, she became so furious. She felt that this is the last minute I should be talking to Daksha. This thought came to her mind. Rudravagam, in fact, in many of the Vedic sacrifices, Lord Shiva has a great offering to him. Why? Because Lord Shiva is the head of all the demigods. Therefore, he is known as Mahadeva. Devas are the demigods, and he is the boss of all the demigods. He is Mahadeva. And if Mahadeva has no offering in that, what is the use of offering to all the other demigods? So that was Satidevi's mind. And to such a degree that he has become offensive, he went up to Daksha, and she sat down there. Satidevi went and sat in front of Daksha on the ground, sitting there. She started addressing Satidevi. Satidevi was not an ordinary personality. She, through her austerities and the strength she has got from Lord Shiva, she has also gone to such a high degree of spiritual strength that she sat down there, and there is a few verses in the Bhagavatam, she glorifying Lord Shiva. and make Daksha realize who Lord Shiva is through her elegant speech. Such a beautiful representation of Lord Shiva. Yadvaksharam nama gireridam ranam. By chanting these two names, these two letters, Shiva, one who gets released from the cycle of birth and death. Pavitra girtim adhilangya shasanam bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedaram. It says in the Bhagavatam that in such a glorious personality you have offended. Pavitra girtim, and what is Lord Shiva's glory? Lord Shiva's glory is without one black mark. It is so white in color. It's not like our glory. Our glory is very much mixed with white and black. But his glories are purely white. Therefore, Pavitra girtim adhilangya shasanam bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedaram. And to that great personality, you have become so offensive. And you are committing such a sinful activities by so offensive to him. I do not know what is going to happen to him. Daksha was listening to all this when Satidevi was speaking like this. So at one particular point, Satidevi realized that Daksha is not going to do anything about it, nor is going to change his mind. At that point, Satidevi had reached her peak. She could not restrict anymore in that situation. So she decided to give up her body on the spot. So the reason for giving up the body is mentioned there in the Bhagavatam, why she wanted to give up the body. The reason for that is that if I leave this place and if I go back to Kailas, Lord Shiva will not say anything to me. He will still receive me and look after me. There is no doubt about that. But normally he calls me by the name Sati. Sati is the name. She will address me. He normally addresses me by the name Sati. But if after I go back and one day in my service to Lord Shiva, if I make some mistake or if I not up to the mark I perform, one day if by mistake or by chance Lord Shiva addresses me by the name Dakshayani. Dakshayani means Daksha's daughter. What will happen? Because this body has come from through this father. So if I hold this body further from now on, all that's going to happen is one day, by chance, Lord Shiva by any reason address me the word Dakshayani or Daksha's daughter. After all, if something goes wrong, he can say like that. After all, you are the daughter of Daksha. And Dakshayani he might call me. If that happens, that is not very pleasant for me. Just see the mind of Sri Parvati or Satidevi's mind is working. Satidevi is saying this because of her spiritual strength and the yogic power she had. She raised her soul through the Brahmarandham and brought it right up to the head, to the top, and the fire started emitting from there, from the top of the head. So powerful she was. Just sitting there, she could give up her body in one position. And she was so capable that all the sages who were present there, they started looking towards Daksha. And they started saying to Daksha that you should do something because you don't know what will happen after this. But Daksha didn't care. And everybody got disgusted with Daksha and Daksha's behavior in that sacrifice. Before long, Satidevi brought her soul through the Brahmarandham and left that body. And the whole body burned into ashes on that very spot because of the fire which has come out from the body. So when this happened, that immediately Satidevi did not want to have anything to do with Daksha. And that's why she wanted not to have that body anymore. After all, this body was a product of her through his father. That through Daksha, that connection is there with Daksha. And she did not want that connection anymore. And she gave up that body there. And it is then that Satidevi left the world. Satidevi left this world. When Satidevi left this world, and then what we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Sri Narada Maharshi comes to Lord Shiva. Told Lord Shiva what happened at the sacrifice. When he told what happened at the Lord sacrifice, Shiva's anger came up. Shiva could not restrict because this was the thing that was expected to happen and that has happened. And from that anger, in the Bhagavatam, it refers to one particular verse at that point, that how Lord Shiva reacted to that situation. And that is in the Bhagavatam. It says there that Krudha Sudashtoshtapunasa Durjadi jadam tadidvagni sarograrojisham. That from that jada, from the matted hair, he pulled out one hair and smashed it on the floor. Krodha sudashta sudashtoshta budasadur jadid jadam tadidvagni sarograrojisham. Ulkritya rudra sahasottido hasan gambhira nado visasarjadam bhuvi.
That the sound from there has created a personality who is known as Virabhadra. Virabhadra appeared at that point from that hair. When Virabhadra appeared, he asked Lord Shiva, please instruct me what I should do. And this Virabhadra's walking from Kailasa is mentioned that the whole planet was moving with the strength what he had. So powerful a personality, immediately they started moving towards, Shiva instructed them, go to Daksha's sacrifice, what's going on there, destroy the whole sacrifice and come back and finish up the whole thing. That instructions were given. Virabhadra started walking, chanting the holy name of Harahara Mahadeva, referring to Lord Shiva, he was glorifying and walking towards all with a lot of associates, all the Buddhaganas, they were associates all together. They walked towards the sacrificial scene. And as soon as they got there, first thing Virabhadra did was, in the sacrifice, you are not allowed to kill anybody by using any weapon. So what he did was, he straight away went and held Daksha's head and started twisting it. And he twisted the head in such a way, it eventually came off from there. So he threw the head away. Daksha's head was gone. And then along with that, others who have smiled when Lord Shiva was offended, he started looking at every one of them, Virabhadra and his associates. So Bhrigu was apparently wiping his beard at that time. So he pulled all that beard off, so that he doesn't wipe it anymore. Then somebody pushed out. There was another personality sitting there who was also an associate of Daksha. He beat up all his teeth because he smiled apparently. So all the teeth were taken out at that point. So like this, there was a complete destruction and the whole sacrifice did not get completed. So a sacrifice which was begun to bring happiness to Daksha ended up in this way. And everything was done, the job what was instructed was done, they all came back to Mount Kailas again, to Lord Shiva, and paid their respects. And Lord Shiva, fully transcendentally situated, was not affected by all these things. He was still in his trance, situated in transcendence. So when all these things have happened, all the sages who were present there in that assembly, they realized that this is not going in the right direction. Daksha is killed. Now who is the head of the Prajapati? There is no head of the Prajapati. They went to Lord Brahma and again requested Lord Brahma that what should we do now in this situation. Brahma said that there is nothing I can do about it. All we can do is now we will go to Lord Shiva and request him to help us and accept our apologies and offenses what Daksha has committed and somehow the other and bring Daksha back to life again. And in this situation, Brahma assembled all the demigods and they all together went to Kailas. When they went to Kailas, they were seeing the beauty of Kailas at that time. And in the Bhagavatam it says there, they want to see and enjoy the beauty of Kailas very much. But they were frightened all the time that if any of Lord Shiva's associates come and start dealing with them, what will happen? Because the experience they had in the sacrifice, they have not forgotten. So they were in that fearful mood. They all went to see Lord Shiva. Whom did they see there? They see Lord Shiva situated in full transcendental position, performing in his meditation of Sankarshanamurti. Lord Balaram, he performs meditation, Lord Balaram, Sankarshanamurti. And Lord Shiva was situated in that position underneath a tree. And immediately Brahma paid his obeisances to Lord Shiva. Shiva saw this and he could not believe that Brahma, his father, is paying his obeisances to him. So Shiva says to Brahma that it is not proper for you to pay me obeisances. After all, you are my father. Brahma said to Shiva, father, son, all these relationships are only up to a limit. By performing austerities and penances, you have become such a great personality. Where am I? What's my position compared to your position in the spiritual world? So these obeisances are purely I am offering to you. Earlier,
when Lord Shiva was talking about giving respects to somebody, Lord Shiva mentioned that if he offers respects to someone, that person who receives the respect from somebody should think that that respect is not being given to him. On the other hand, the respect is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within the heart. Just like when you pay your respects to a sannyasi or any spiritually advanced personality, the person who receives that respect from somebody should not think, oh, he is paying that obeisances to me, so I should be somebody very important in this world. Instead, on the other hand, sannyasis and all the great souls in this world, when they are offered respects, they should actually think, understand that that offering is actually made to that Supreme Lord who is present in him, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is present within his heart. Because in the elevated devotees and elevated sannyasis, Supreme Lord's presence is felt more, because they, by their austerities and penances, they were able to get that recognition from the Supreme Lord. That is why, because of Krishna's presence in them is more than others, therefore we offer respects to them in that way, that the presence of Krishna is there. Yadyad vibhuti malsatvam mama tejomsha sambhavam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that wherever you find any of my opulences, you should also pay the respects to them. Even the great personalities, you should offer your respects, because mama tejomsha sambhavam. It is my opulence that is coming through them. It's not their opulence. That's what we have to understand. When some wealthy person is displaying his wealth, or he is respected in a big assembly, or great leader is respected in assembly, the qualities that is being respected is not his quality. Actually, it is Krishna's qualities. It is manifesting through that individual. That's all. Nothing else. But falsely, when someone identifies with one's own body, he accepts all these offerings and respects, thinking as though he has been recognized and respected, and he foolishly get proud, and with the result that he fall down from his position. So in this case also, when Brahma offered the respects, Lord Shiva did not accept that as a respect to him. Rather, Lord Shiva, because of his transcendental position, he knew that this respect is actually goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That is Lord Shiva's position. So Shiva actually accepted Brahma's request, and accordingly he decided to go with them and correct the situation. So, and Lord Shiva, Brahma said to Lord Shiva that if you get upset with all of us, with the demigods and me, what is going to happen to this world what we have created and all these living beings? They should be protected, they should be given all facilities, Daksha should be brought back to life. So this experience was enough for Lord Shiva to teach this lesson to Daksha. They went to the sacrificial scene, and there Shiva didn't have to say anything much. She just called Daksha by name. As soon as he called Daksha, as though he was sleeping from his sleep, he woke up and he came back to his life. That is what his Lord Shiva's potency is. And then he asked, was Supreme Lord was present here for the sacrifice? Vishnu wasn't present there. So Vishnu was not there, and that is why all these incidents have happened. And because of that, then Shiva himself invited Vishnu to come for the sacrifice, and the sacrifice was eventually properly managed by them. So this whole episode is described in 6 chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and it is after that we move on to the Dromaraj story. So Daksha's story is teaching us that this Karmakandam and Rajogunam, these two things can cause problems in life. That karma is such a thing that when one gets addicted with karma means actually it generates ajnanam. Ajnanam means ignorance. That this concept in the modern world that working like hard, like an ass or a bull or whatever it is, this is not human life. Human life is not meant for to be like that. Human life is meant to be more thoughtful. And through the knowledge what the sages have given us, that karma means entanglement. Karma only entangles one to this world. Karma only increases our ignorance. It doesn't help anything more than that. But due to the false understanding, sometimes, because we do not know how to execute karma properly in this world, we get affected by karma so much
with the result that we have to accept and an opportunity to get another human body and get this understanding of the intricacies of law of karma may not happen again. So that is what Srimad Bhagavatam is telling us. Particularly jnanis. Jnanis do not want to do anything with this karma because they know how much binding it is. And this Karmakanda section is also not much different. But the difference is, Karmakanda section is at least the conception is right that one can free oneself from the if it is done in the proper understanding or proper conception. So from there you can see, even if we don't perform Karmakanda section, on the other hand, our karma, what is in this material world, which is full of, as Krishna calls us, akarma and vikarma, what this is going to eventually bring to us. You can see from this, that this activity is what we do in this material world. Because the sages knew these things, they knew the intricacies of karma, they kept this forcefully, they put it through the Vedic literature. And that is why everywhere you will find this most powerful thing known as karma coming up all the time. Every time it comes up, what karma has created, what's bad karma. But modern world rejects all these things because they are not able to see the subtle aspects of life. Just like as we discussed before, in the case of Kapilavastu, they said to the Ahuri Devi that the short span of life of birth and death is considered to be everything. But from the Vedic point of view, when the spirit soul left the spiritual world and started its journey, an endless journey in which this human form of body is only a few years' time, is not considered to be such everything significant. There is so many life after death, there is life before death. It is not everything is finished with this human life. So similarly, that karma which follows the living entity through another different lifetimes and in different ways, and from there is no possibility of escaping at any stage. That is how complicated the laws of karma is. And that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also that karma, when that is performed without proper understanding, it will become vikarma or it will become akarma. So like this, it is mentioned, this is what is the message from the Daksha story. So I'll just read one chapter from the fourth canto and then... Shri Maitreya Vacham Manavastu Shalarubayam Tisrakanyascha Jajnire Akudi Devahudishya Prasudi Ritivishudaha Akudi Mrujaya Pradada Vibhradamadim Rupa Kutriya Dharma Vashrityam Shadarubhanu Modidaha Prajavadi Savagavan Rujis Tasyama Jijanal Vidhinam Brahma Varchasi Paramena Samadhina Yastayo Purusha Sakshal Vishnur Yajnasarubadre Yastri Isadikshana Bhude Amshabhudana Pahinim Aninye Sugraham Putriyam Putram Vidadarojisham Swayambhuvo Mudayukto Vijijar Jagraha Dakshinam Tam Kamayanam Bhagavan Uvaha Yijusham Badi Tushtayam Toshamabanno Janayel Dwadashatmajan Tushtayam Toshamabanno Ajanayel Dwadashatmajan Tosha Pradosha Sandosho Bhadrashyandiri Daspadi Idma Kavir Vibhu Swanna Sudevo Rojana Dushal Tushida Namade Devam Asan Swayambhuandari Mariji Mishrakshayo Yajna Suraganeshwaraha Priya Pradota Nevado, Manivotro Mahavajaso, Talputra, Pautra Natranam, Anurtam, Tadandaram, Deva Hudimadata, Karma, Ayatmajamanu, Tal Sambandishra Priam, Bhavada, Gadadomama, Dakshaya Brahmavutraya, Prasudim Bhagavan Manu, Praya Chadil Kazasargastreo, Kyamidado, Mahan, Ya, Kardamasuda, Prokta, Nava Brahmarshivat Naya, Tasam, Prasudi Prasam, Prochamanam, Nibhodame, Patni Marijes Tugala Sushave, Kardamal Maya, Kashavam, Purnima, Anamja, Eora, Pudinam Jagal, Purnima Asmada Virajam, Ishogam Jabarandama, Deva William, Hare, Padashaja, Bulsari Diva, Atre, Patna Nasuya, Trenjetni, Suya, Eshasusudan, Eshasusudan, Dattam, Durvasasam, Somavalni, Sham, Brahma Samhavan, Sri Vidrivajam, Atre, Agrahe, Surashreshta, Sitilpat, Yandahedava, Kinjachin, Yashavoja, Medadakya, Himi Guru, Sri Maitreyavajam, Brahmana Nodya Sashtamatra Brahmavidambara Sahabatnyaya Amrusham Kuladrim Tamasistida Tasmin Prasunastavaka Parasha Shogayani Vagbi Savad Virudhishte Nurvindhyaya Astamandana Pranayamena Samyam Yamano Varshashadamini Adishta Degavadina Nurgundo Nilabho Jana Sharanam Vambrabaddeham Ya Eva Jagadishwara Prajama Atmasamamahyam Prayachat Prayachat Vivijindayam Tapyamanam Tribhuvanam Pranayamaita Agnisagnina, Nergadianamane Modhana Samisha, Prabhavastraya, Absaromini Gandharva, Siddha Vidyadharagai, Idayamanesha, Sada Ashramodam Yayum,
ത്രാദുർഭാവസംയോഗം വിദ്യോദിതമനാ മുനി ഉത്തിഷ്ടേകവാദീനദർശവാൻ പ്രണമ്യബദ്ധവൽഭൂമ ഉപദസ്തേർഹണാഞ്ജലി ഉഷഹംസ സുവർണസ്ഥാൻ സ്വയേ സ്വൈശ്ചിന്യൈശ്ചിനിതാൻ കൃപാവലോകേന സദ്വന ദ്വദനേ ഓപലംഭിതാൻ രുദ്രോജിഷോ പ്രതിഹദേ മുനിരക്ഷിണി ചേതസ്ഥൽ പ്രവണാമ്യഞ്ജൻ അസ്താവീൽ സംഹദാഞ്ജലി പ്രശ്ലേഷണയാം സൂക്തയാ വാച സർവലോകഗിരീയസ ശ്രീ അത്രിനുവാച വിശ്വോത്ഭവസ്ഥിതിലേഷു വിഭജ്യമാനേ മായാഗുണൈരനുയുഗം ഗൃഹീതം ദേഹാഃ തേ ബ്രഹ്മവിഷ്ണുഗിരിശ പ്രണതോസ്മ്യഹം വസ്തേഭ്യക ഏവ ബാധാം ഇഹോ ബഹുദാം ഏകോ മൈഹ ഭഗവാൻ വിവിധ പ്രധാനേ ശ്യത്തീകൃതപ്രജനമായകഥം യൂയം അത്രാഗതാസ്തനിപുരുതാം മനസോപി ദൂരാം ഭൂതപ്രസീദ മഹാനിഹ വിസ്മയോ മേ ശ്രീ മൈത്രയുവാച ഇതി തസ്യ വച ശ്രുത്വാ ത്രസ്തയേ വിപദർഷവ പ്രത്യാഹ ശ്ലേഷ്ണയവാച പ്രഹസ്യമുഷി പ്രഭോ ശ്രീദേവോജോ യഥാകൃതസ്ഥേ സങ്കല്പോ ഭാവ്യം തേനൈവ നാന്യഥാ സൽസംഗപ്പത്സൽസംഗൽപ്പസ്യ തേ ബ്രഹ്മണ്യധ്വൈധ്യായിതി ദേവയം അഥാ ആസ്പദം ശൂദാസ്തേ ആത്മജാലോക വിശ്രുതാഃ ഭവിതാരോഗ്യഭദ്രം തേ വിസ്രപ്സ്യന്തി ജതേ യശ ഏവം കാമൂരം ദത്വാ പ്രതിജന്മ സുരേശ്വര സഭാജിതായേ സ്ഥൈവത്സമ്യ ദന്ത്യോർമിഷദോസ്തദാഃ സോമോ മൂർഭ്രമണാംശേനാ ദത്വാ വിഷ്ണുസ്തി യോഗവിൽ ദുർവാസാ ശങ്കരസ്യാംശോ നിബദ്ധാംഗിരസ പ്രജാ ശ്രദ്ധാത്വംഗിരസപത്നി ചതസ്രോനുസ്തകന്യക സീനിവാലി കുഹൂര ചതുർത്ഥ്യനുവദിസ്തം തൽപുത്രാവാരാസ്തു പരാവരാം പരാവാസ്ത്വം ഖ്യാതോ സ്വാരോജിഷേദസ്വരേ സ്വരജിഷോന്ദരേ ഉദധ്യോ ഭഗവാൻ സാക്ഷാൽ ബ്രഹ്മിഷ്ഠ ബൃഹസ്പതി പുലസ്യോ അജനയൽപജ്ഞ അഗസ്ത്യം ജഹഗർഭുവി അഗസ്ത്യം ജഹഗർഭുവി നോന്യജന്മനി ദഹ്രാഗ്നി വിശ്രവാശ്ച മഹാതമാം തസ്യക്ഷപതിർദേവ കുബേര ഇടവിലാസുത ഭൃഗുഖ്യാഖ്യാ മഹാഭാഗ പത്നിയാ പുത്രാൻ അജീജനൽ ധാതാരം ജു ധാതാരം ശ്രീം ചമകുവിൽ പുരസ്യോ അജനയൽപത്നി അഗസ്ത്യം ജഹഗർഭുവി ആയുധിമേയുസ്തയോരോകാൻ സർഗൈരഭാവേൻ യശകർദ്ദമൈ രൗഹിത്രസ്തവാനഗതിസ്തവാ ശൃണ്ദ ശബ്ദമാനസ്യ സദ്യ പാവഹരപരാ പ്രസൂതിമാനവിന്ദക്ഷാമേഹിജാത്മജ അസ്യാം സർജേദോ ഷോഡശാമരലോചന ത്രയോദശോദാധർമായ തഥൈകാമഗ്നേയേ വിഭൂതിദ്രഭ്യമേകാം യുക്തേഭ്യോ ഭവായേകാം ഭവച്ചിതേ ശ്രദ്ധാമൈത്രീദയാശാന്തി സ്തുഷ്ടി പുഷ്ടിക്രിയോനദി ബുദ്ധിർമേധാതിരിക്ഷാഹേ മൂർത്തിധർമ്മസ്യ വത്നയാം ശ്രദ്ധാസൂദാശുവം മൈത്രീ പ്രസാദോഭയം യഥാ ശാന്തിസുഖമോ സന്തുഷ്ടി സ്വയം മുഷ്ടിനസൂയതാം യോഗം ക്രിയോനന്ദർപ്പമർത്ഥം ബുദ്ധിനസൂയത ദേഹാസ്പതിം ദീക്ഷാദുക്ഷേമം ഹൈ പ്രശ് ಸಂಧ್ಯಾ ದಿವ್ಯವಾಂದಿತಗಿರಿಯಾಣಿ ಪೇದುಕುಸುಮ ಪೇದೂಕುಸುಮ ವೃಷ್ಟಯ ಮುನಯ ಸೃಷ್ಟಿಷ್ಟಾಂಜಿತ ಗಂಧರ್ವಗಿನ್ನರಾಂ ಮೃತ್ಯಂದಿಸ್ಮ ಶ್ರೀಯೋ ದೇವ್ಯಂ ಆಸೀಲ್ ಪರಮಮಂಗಳಂ ದೇವ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಾದಯ ಸರ್ವೇವದಸ್ತುಭೈಷ್ಟವೈ ದೇವ ಊಜೋ ಯೋ ಮಾಯಾ ವಿರಜಿತಂ ನಿಜಯಾತ್ಮನೀನಂ ಹೇ ರೂಪಮೇದಂ ಯುವದಲ್ ಪ್ರಜಕ್ಷಣಾಯ ಏದೇನ ಧರ್ಮಸವನೇ ಕೃಷಿಮೂರ್ತಿನಾದ್ಯ ಪ್ರಾದುಶ್ಚಕಾರ ವೃಷೈ ನಮಃ ಪರಸ್ಮೈ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಸ್ಥಿತಿ ವಿಧಿಕರೋಪಶಮಾಯ ಸೃಷ್ಟಾಂ ಸತ್ವೇನ ಸುರಗಣಮನನುಮಯ ತತ್ವಂ ದೃಶ್ಯ ತದಭ್ರಗರುಣೇನ ವಿಲೋಕನೇನ ಯಚ್ಛೈನಿಗೇತಂ ಅವಲಂಕ್ಷಿಪದಾರವಿಂದಂ ಏವಂ ಸುರಗಣೈಸ್ತಾದಂ ಭಗವಾನ್ ತಪಿವಿಷ್ಠಿತೋ ಲಬ್ಧಾವಲೋಕೈರ್ಯೈದು ಅಚಿದೋ ಗಂಧಮಾದನಂ ತಾ ವಿಮೋ ವೈ ಭಗವತೋ ಹರೇ ರಂಶಾ ವಿಹಾರದೋ ಭಾರವ್ಯಾಯಜಮೋ ಕೃಷ್ಣೋ ಯದು ಗುರುದ್ಧವೋ ಸ್ವಾಹಾಭಿಮಾನಿನಶ್ಚಾಗ್ನಿ ಅಲ್ಪಯಾಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಅಜೀಜನಲ್ ಪಾವಕಂ ಭವಾನಂಜ ಶುಚಿಂ ಜ ಹುತಮೋಜನಂ ಹೇವ್ಯೋಗ್ನಯ ಸಂಭವಂ ಚತ್ವಾರಿಂಶಚ್ಚ ಮಂಜಯ ತೈ ಗೋನ ಪಂಜಾಶಲ್ ಸಾಗಂ ಪಿತಪಿತಾಮಹೈ ವೈದಾನಿಕೇ ಕರ್ಮಣಿ ಎನ್ನಾಮಹುರ್ಬ್ರಹ್ಮವಾದಿಭಿ ಆಗ್ನೇಯ ವಿಷ್ಣಯಜ್ಞೆ ನಿರೂಪ್ಯಂತೆ ಯಜ್ಞಯಸ್ತುತೆ ಅಗ್ನಿಶಾತೋ ಬರ್ಹಿಷಾದ್ದೋ ಸಾಮ್ಯೋಭಿಧರಮಾಜ್ಯವ ಸಾಗ್ನಯೋ ನಗ್ನಯಸ್ತೇಷಾಂ ಪತ್ನಿ ದಾಕ್ಷಾಯಿಣೀ ಸ್ವಧಾಂ ತೇಭ್ಯೋ ದಧಾರಗಣ್ಯೇ ವೈ ದ್ವಯಿನಾಂ ಧ್ವರಿಣೀಂ ಸ್ವಧಾಂ ಉಭೇದೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮವಾದಿನ್ಯೋ ಜ್ಞಾನವಿಜ್ಞಾನವಾರಗೈ ಭವಸ್ಯ ಪತ್ನೀ ದು ಸದಿ ಭವಂ ದೇವಮನುವ್ರತ ಆತ್ಮನಸದೃಶಂ ಪುತ್ರಾಂ ಮಲೇಭೇ ಗುಣಶೀಲತಾಂ ಪಿತರೆ ಪ್ರತಿರೂಪಸ್ಯ ಭವಾಯ ನಾಗಸೇರುಷ ಅಪ್ರೌಢಭಾವಾತ್ಮನ ಆತ್ಮಾನ ಮಹಾದ್ಯೋಗ ಸಂಯುಧಾಃ ಇದು ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಪುರಾಣೇ ಚತುರ್ಥಸ್ಕಂದೇ ರುದ್ರಮೈತ್ರೇಯ ಸಂವಾದೇ ಪ್ರಥಮೋಧ್ಯಾಯ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಮಾಂ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ. ಸೊ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ದಿಸ್ ಹೋಲ್ ಸ್ಟೋರಿ ವಾಸ್ ಸ್ಪೋಕನ್ ಎವ್ರಿಬಡಿ ವಾಸ್ ಎನ್ಕ್ವೈರಿಂಗ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಎವ್ರಿಬಡಿ
No one was bothered about Sati Devi. This is the sad thing, that Sati Devi gave up her body in these conditions. So Vidura at that point asked Maitreya Rishi one important question, that when all these things were over, and at the end, in the sacrifice, when Mahavishnu appeared and all the things were, everyone got back their what they have lost, like Bhrigu got back his beard and others who got back his teeth and so many other things who had lost their lives, they all got back and came back to their life. Nobody asked anything about Sati Devi, what happened to Sati Devi. And Vidura felt very, very unhappy about it, that it is due to Sati Devi that all these things have developed in this way. And no one had cared to ask about Sati Devi, what happened at that time. So it was then that Maitreya Rishi said that what Sati Devi did after that. Sati Devi, after she gave up her body, she wanted to take birth again, and she took birth as the daughter of Himavan or the Himalaya mountains. Himalaya mountains, all the mountains, rivers, everything, they have two forms. One is known as Devadalmagam, and Devadalmagam means that their presence as the demigod, they have a form there. And Himavan also, Himalaya mountains has a form and a personality behind it. She took birth as his daughter, and she is known as Haimavati from then. And that Haimavati, she performed penances to such a high degree that by glorifying Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva had forced to accept her again as his consort, and she became, Parvata means mountain, and Parvata's daughter is Parvati, and she became Sri Parvati, or Lord Shiva's consort. And from then on, Lord Shiva and Parvati lived together as eternal consorts. And from then, where many other powerful personalities were born. So this is how Sri Parvati came into, after Sati Devi gave up her body and became Sri Parvati as Lord Shiva's consort. That's where we stop there today. If there's any questions, please.